15 honorable members, our guests from Auditor General's Office, National Treasury. You are all welcome to to this meeting. I'll take this opportunity to welcome even the support staff of Parliament, department. I've seen Lucy in the meeting, the CFO. I'm not sure who's another person. and all our guests, you are welcome, and those that have joined this meeting virtually to want to observe the proceedings of the meeting. With that word, I'll request that we observe a moment of silence for meditation or prayer. Thank you very much. are you able to flag the agenda?
Yes, Chairperson, I'll flag the agenda now.
Okay, members must tell me if you see it because I'm using the phone, and as calls comes in, they disturb me. You see. There's the agenda. Honorable members, are you able to see it?
Yes, Chair.
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Can I then move for the adoption of the agenda?
I move.
Honorable Makaseni moves. Can I get the seconder?
I second, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Malema just seconded the agenda. Can we then go to item number 2 to note the apologies, if there are any?
Chairperson, the only apology received is from Honorable Heron, who is unable to attend the meeting as the Section 194 inquiry has reconvened. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, as we have adopted the agenda, the two items that we have invited the Auditor General. The meeting that we are supposed to have held it before we interacted with the department on the APPs, and because of other meetings, we couldn't have. And then we are then invited National Treasury to come and brief us on the on the issues that honorable members have been raising on relocation of the funds and the policies. And how do we measure, how does the Treasury and the Department monitor the achievement of the target as the money has been shifted from one province to another or from one metro to another. Those are the two items that we have. We are going to invite now the Auditor General to take us through their presentation, and because the items are not related, we'll then take the Auditor General from now until and have the discussion until 11, from 11 o'clock. Then we'll then take National Treasury until the the until 1 o'clock. Can we agree on that, honourable members?
Agreed, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm now going to invite the Auditor General to take us.
We have a bit of a change in the team. You would remember that Londoloza Songwewu were always the senior manager portfolio. In terms of our audit standards, we also always need to consider the period that a person is involved in the audit so that they don't get too familiar with the environment. So it was time in terms of our internal policies for rotation amongst the senior managers. We have now Tsepo Shabangu. He's the new senior manager responsible for the human settlements portfolio. Tsepo is a very experienced senior manager with a lot of experience and knowledge around him, so I'm sure and I'm comfortable that Tsepo is up to the task to deal with the complexities within the human settlements portfolio. So Tsepo, maybe if you can just open your camera if possible, then the members can just see who you are. I think you're muted.
Okay. No, thank you. Morning, Chairperson. Morning, honourable members. Yeah, my name is Tsepo Shabangu, as Corne has indicated. Thank you.
Morning to you, Mr. Shabangu, and welcome.
Thank you.
Maybe if you can flag the presentation.
I'm trying. I'm not giving the right. I try to share. The host disabled me from sharing. I'm not sure.
I'm a co-host now. For the decision. Portfolio committees and the role of coordinating ministries. We also reflected on our role. To citizens and the citizens' experience and how we collect the of information with you as a critical stakeholder in this network of role players within the accountability ecosystem. I think our presentation is focusing mainly on the material irregularities that has been identified within the portfolio. So there's nothing that has been identified from a national point of view as of now, but there is material irregularities that has been identified at the provincial point. And those are the material irregularities and the status that we will share with you. And then the other discussion point from our side is the proactive reviews that we did on the APPs and some of the findings we've identified there. So in the main, our presentation will focus on those two matters. Tsepo, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready, Corne. I'm sharing. Can you see the presentation?
Not yet on my side.
Because I'm sharing.
I think if the committee secretary can assist us and give Waldina M. Sharing rights,
Okay. No, thank you, Honorable Chair. While Waldina is sharing the screen, I believe that the slides were shared, Chair, with you and the members yesterday. So with your permission, Honorable Chair, do you want me to go slide by slide or just to lift the key issues, especially around the proactive review of the 2023-2024 APPs that were submitted recently?
Okay. Just give members information, Mr. Shabangu.
Okay.
Whether you talk to it, but members must be able to follow you or...
Okay. Waldina, please go to slide 7. We're starting from there. Slide 8. So, Chairperson, we did the proactive review for the human settlement entities at National during February before they submitted to yourselves for engagement before the final approval. So we focused on the purpose of the proactive review to ensure that we understand the preparation and revision processes that they go through when they go through this preparation of this APPs and stuff. So what we did was we also focused on the completeness of the relevant indicators relating to the core functions and mandate of the department as well as its entities. And we also looked at whether the prior material misstatements were corrected. But fortunately for this portfolio, there were no material misstatements in the engagements that we had with you last year around AOPO or performance information. And we also looked at the measurability, relevance, and quality of the indicators, as well as the plan targets to ensure that they achieve their mandate and the desired services for our citizens. All this was done to assist the minister, as well as the accounting officers and authorities of the respective entities in their oversight processes. And then also we engaged with the minister on the outcomes of these reviews. So, Chair, you will see that we did not perform this review on Housing Development Agency because we just recently took it back. It's no longer Section 4.3. It is it's a full AGSA audit now with effect from February 2023. So we took it away from Rako Mine Associates. We also did not scope in the NHFC for this review, but we'll do it for the 2024-2025 APP review. So the findings from this review will not have an impact on the 2022-2023 audit that we'll be performing now. So when we come to present to you the audit outcomes in October or November, we will not be including these findings in that slides or reports, Chair. I just wanted to highlight that to you and the members. And the next slide, Chair, it summarizes the findings that we came across when we did the review. We focused on the department itself, community schemes, Ombuds Service, CISOS, National Home Builders Registration Council, NHBRC, as well as the Property Practitioners Regulatory Authority, which is the PPRA. And this is just a snapshot of the overall findings that we came across. You will see that all four of them had the issue with indicators not being well-defined. The details are in the next slide where we show the examples, but I'll just go through this summary quickly. You will see that at the Department of Human Settlement, there was misalignment between the targets and the indicator. We had two issues there. And at the PPRA, we had a lot of issues there, but they also managed to eventually correct some of this because they had a lot of indicators and which were not even talking to the TID. And NHBRC only had one issue with CISOS, they had having two issues where indicator title in the TID differed from the title in the program itself, in the body of the APP. Where the department didn't have any measurability issue when it comes to the indicators, the one that had the most issues was the PPRA, where the source of data and method of calculation was not clear. And we had engagement with management, and most of them were eventually corrected. And HBRC also had five issues which are similar to the ones for PPRA. So for CSOS, the main issue there with that one indicator was that they had quarterly targets which would add up to, let's say, 15%, but the annual target would be 20%. So the quarterly targets didn't tie up to the annual target. That was the main issue there. And the completeness of the indicators in the APP, we only had issues at the department and CSOs, whereby at the department, two MTSF indicators were not included in the APP. And those indicators were the number of integrated implementation plans for PDAs completed. And the second one was the number of PDAs invested in. So those were the two MTSF indicators. I think management eventually corrected that. And for CSOs, we had an indicator in a TID, but it was not in the body itself of the APP. So where the indicators were not verifiable, the issue was only identified at PPRA. As you can see, the department, NHBRC, and CSOs agreeing in that respect. Because the issue there at PPRA, you'll find the TID saying that they'll use a SEP report, for example, but a SEP report can be any report. So it needs to be specific in terms of which SEP report are they referring to, because someone can just draw any SEP report and try to come up with the POE for that particular performance. And the last category, Chairperson, is the relevant aspect, where we had discussions with the department around their use of the number of reports to measure the performance of a provincial department. So the department eventually agreed to make amendments to allow us to consider the contents and interventions made by the department based on its mandate, so that the indicator can be relevant to their mandate. So that was eventually addressed, Chair. Chair, the next slide really talks to just unpack the summary slide that I just presented to you. I think if I go through it, I'll be repeating myself. I think it will be a good read for the chairperson and the committee members in their own time, just to link it to the previous slide, Chair. And the same applies to the next slide, where we are just giving you examples, slide 11, where we are just giving you examples. For example, if you look at under the Department of Human Settlement, when we look at the usefulness, the first one is the number of reports of on entity performance monitored, which I already referred to when I presented that snapshot slide. The second example is the number of integrated implementation plans for PDAs completed, whereby we're saying that this indicator was not included in the APP, though the DHS is responsible to achieve the 94 plans as per the MTSF target. And the other example, if you go through Program 5, about affordable housing program, national implementation plan for blocked projects implemented, there we're saying the measure is qualitative. But when you look at it, unpack it, it was written as if it's a qualitative measure or indicator. But it was eventually resolved, Honorable Chair. And I've already mentioned the examples there under PPRA, Chairperson. And if you move over to the next slide, where we are just the next one, we are just talking to the items that we discussed with the minister, where I also indicated in the initial slide that there were no significant issues reported in the human settlements portfolio, the national level around performance information, especially usefulness findings in that aspect. And we engaged with the minister and also shared her role in this area on the 28th of March. So now we are sharing with the portfolio committee to emphasize the role of the portfolio committee in this regard, to say we would appreciate it if the portfolio committee can engage with the minister and the accounting office and authorities to ensure that the real root causes for usefulness findings that I mentioned earlier are addressed going forward. Chair, this is the end of the APP proactive review summary for the human settlement portfolio at national level. I'm not sure if Chair would like me to pause here or to continue with the MI presentation.
Proceed, and then members will note the questions. We'll come okay. back to. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chair. I think we received a request to focus on the MIs and to also take the members through our expanded mandate. So we decided to summarize it in the following slide, where we share with the committee, honorable members, the extended powers and what does it mean for us and for our stakeholders like yourself and our citizens. So here we are just saying to you, Chair and honorable members, that as AGSA, we've been reporting audit findings over the years, and some of them were repetitive, and we've been asked, hey, do you come in year in and year out, and you raise findings, and then nothing happens. So even the citizens were starting to question the relevance of our auditing and methodology and so forth. So we got these powers and then we are now in the process of implementing them, and they are aligned to our enforcement strategic objective in our strategy as the AGSA, where we would like to apply our powers to directly and indirectly recover resources lost to the state and taxpayers and ensure application of consequences for wrongdoing, which is explicitly linked to our culture shift 2030 strategy, as Corneille indicated in her introduction earlier. So, Chair, the material irregularity means any non-compliance with or contravention of legislation, fraud, theft, or a breach of fiduciary duty identified during an audit performance under the Public Audit Act. That result, you know, it's likely to result in a material financial loss, the misuse of laws of a material public resource, or substantial harm to a public sector institution or the general public. So, Chair, the main key expansion of our mandate are the ones on the right, where number one, we are now, we can refer material irregularities to the relevant public bodies for further investigations, like your SIUs, your NPAs, and public protector, and so forth. The second one is the recommended action in audit report to resolve the material irregularities. This one is the process that comes before we move to the remedial phase, after we have notified the accounting officer about the MI, and we feel like we determined that they are taking longer to implement the action plans that they said they will implement. And Chair, the next one is we take binding remedial actions for failure to implement recommendations. This comes after now where we conclude that after giving the accounting officer specific timelines to implement our recommendations, and we conclude that appropriate action has not been taken by the accounting officer or accounting authority, then we move to the remedial action, which is more binding, like the public protector's remedial action. And the last resort, which is the issue of a certificate of debt for failure to implement a remedial action if financial loss was involved. This is the last resort. Chairperson. And the overall aim of our expanded mandate is to instill a culture of accountability, improve the protection of resources, enhance public sector performance, and encourage ethical culture, also to strengthen public sector institutions to better serve the people of South Africa. And Chair, when I was talking about the substantial harm to a public sector institution or general public, think it's more even applicable in your portfolio, the human sector, sort of the human settlement sector, whereby we see that some of the projects get started and they get stopped in between. But when you sit back and think about it, for those housing projects to be implemented in the first place, there must have been a feasibility study. There must have been a need from our citizens on the ground for those houses. And when those houses are not delivered, we would like to focus in that space, the MIs around that space, the harm to the general public. So we are not there yet, but we are looking into that space because we believe that those are the qualitative material irregularities that can also make a significant impact in the lives of our citizens. Share the next slide talks to the human settlement sector MIs status to date. Share, you'll realize that some of this, so we gave you a status update, I think last year, October, when we presented the sector outcomes. So this is just a status update since the last engagement. You will see, Chair, that for Gauteng, we have one MI that was resolved. That MI related to the excessive rental for the Deep Blue Hostel TRUs that have been rented since 2016 instead of being purchased. So the lease agreement has since been cancelled and the auditees, so we concluded that appropriate action has been taken, thus saving the state a future rental expenditure, whereas the assets could have been bought. And still in Gauteng, Chair, you will see that there's two MIs where we say they were MI notified. There, Chair, we are still awaiting feedback from NPA. Remember in the last engagement, we indicated that the MI will be referred to the NPA. So we are still awaiting a feedback from NPA. NPA is awaiting feedback from the court. So that's the status for one. The other one, we are awaiting feedback from the Office of the Premier with regards to the forensic report for the forensic investigation that they conducted. Remember in the last engagement, we told you that this MIs will be referred for investigation. So the Office of the Premier did the investigation, but we are waiting the report. The delay there is caused by, I think, the engagement partner for the service provider resigned. So that is what is causing the delay there, Chair. And if you move over to Northwest, you'll see that one MI is under consultation stage. I don't want to dwell too much in that one because it's not yet finalized as an MI, but it's just about the contract extension for additional work, and there's an overpayment element in that space, but we're still consulting to conclude that it's definitely an MI. And it's still under Northwest, Chair, under MI notified, you'll see that Northwest has two. And Chair, those two, they are from last year also, where we are concluding that the accounting officer still needs to implement some of the recommendations that were agreed upon. For example, to follow steps to recover, to initiate investigations and actions to prevent the recurrence of this MI. I think the total value of there is around 9.7 million or 10 million for both of them combined. And Chair, if you move to Limpopo only has two, which are under consultation stage as well. We are still determining if they are full MI. questions. And Chair, still under Free State for remedial phase MIs, those three, Chair, one is the overpayment on the CRU G hostel in Welkom Thabang G hostel for financial loss of 20 million. And the second one is the overpayment on a housing project in Kroonstad, found to have contravened Treasury Regulations 8.11 and caused a financial loss of 6.6 million. And the third one, the Infra State Chair, the one around COVID-19 claims, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, standing time payment to contractor, which cost 10 million financial loss. And this one, Chair, the last one for 10.1 million, it has been referred to the DPCI, also known as the Hawks, for further investigation, Chair. And if you move over to KZN, similar to Mpumalanga, Chair, we don't have any MIs at this stage in KZN, Chair. And if you move over to Northern Cape, the two MIs that were notified, they also come from last year. I think they were shared with the committee as well. But those two, Chair, we are moving to a recommendation stage now to include them in the auditor's report, because we are concluding that the accounting officer has not taken appropriate action as we agreed per the timelines that we agreed upon. So that's the status at the Northern Cape. We are moving to a recommendation phase. And Eastern Cape, Chair, one MI was concluded as not an MI, so it means it was resolved. And the four MIs that were resolved in Eastern Cape, Chair, they relate to the ones that were shared last year, where the bidder not achieving the highest score was appointed. Those individual transactions add up to the 23 million. But fortunately, they were stopped before any payments could have been made. So there was a 23 million prevention of financial loss for those four transactions. And Chair, still under Eastern Cape, where you see MIs where accounting officer disagrees. Yeah, we have an instance now where the accounting officer disagrees with the two MIs. The one way is non-compliance with the Treasury Regulations 8.1 for payment of agency fees without value created. And we're saying it cost a financial loss of 127 million. And the second one is the same non-compliance with Treasury Regulations 8.1 for payment for services not rendered in respect of TRUs. And it cost a financial loss of 16 million. We are still consulting, Honorable Chair, within our office on this one for a way forward, since the accounting officer is disagreeing with the MI. If you move over to the next slide, Chair, we're still on MI. This is just the details of the previous slide. Talk to the slides that I was talking to in the previous slide where we summarized all the nine provinces. You will see for Free State, we only mentioned two because they are the same in nature. We mentioned the top two out of the eight because they are the same in nature as they all relate to the COVID-19 the claims. And even the, yeah. So Chair, I would like to take you and the honorable members to the next slide where we deal with the material irregularity process making impact, to say that overall, we believe that we slowly we are seeing the fruits and the benefits of this extended mandate that we were given, like I mentioned in the earlier slides, to see that we are seeing the prevention of financial loss. The financial loss recovered, we're still working out how much financial loss has been recovered. For example, in Northwest, I know there was something recovered. We're still in the process of finding out definitely how much was recovered there. So that zero may change when we come back in October, Chair, to present to you the status of the MIs. And where the prevented financial loss took place, it's the 23 million that I talked to in the previous slide when I referred to the four transactions in the Eastern Cape where the MI ensured that the contract was cancelled before payments were made, where the supplier who did not achieve the highest score was appointed, so the contract was cancelled there. And where the internal controls and processes improve to prevent recurrence, there it talks to Eastern Cape and Gauteng, where we got feedback that the accounting officer is they are trying their best to put controls in place to ensure that the similar MIs don't occur. And similar to financial loss recovery, if you look at the zero there for responsible officials identified and disciplinary processes completed or in process, we're still gathering information from our colleagues in the provinces, Chair, for us to have an accurate figure for sharing with you in future, Chair. And the next one, Chair, where fraud or criminal investigations are instituted, I would like to apologize, Chair, because by the time we submitted, we concluded that it's two, but when we unpacked the data after submission last night, we realized that it's four. So hence, I would like to apologize. It's two in the Free State and two in Gauteng. The two in the Free State is the one where they are doing their own investigation. And another one is that one for COVID-19 that I said was referred to the Hawks in the other slide. And for Gauteng is the one for NPA, where they are still awaiting a feedback from the NPA. And the other one is for the one for 116 million, where they are still awaiting feedback from the Office of the Premier. So the total should be four there, Chair, instead of two. My apology for that. And the other one, Chair, where the supplier's contract was stopped and prevented money from being lost. Then, Chair, it's two, and it talks to Eastern Cape Province and Gauteng Province. So they are the two provinces where they managed to stop the supplier's contract based on our MIs. And for one, for Gauteng, they have a deep Kloof hostel TRUs where they stopped the contract. And the other one is the Eastern Cape, where the 23 million contract that was stopped, Chair. Yeah. Chair, I think this is the end of our presentation, Chair. I try to be as short as I can.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shabangu and the executive. And the executive director, Ms. Kronje, thank you very much. We want to appreciate the report. I'm now going to allow members to interact with your report. Maybe before members come in, let me get just to check. Maybe you can elaborate on this issue before even members can come in. On the APPs, you are saying the department, you have engaged with them and they've rectified some of the issues, particularly. Because I saw that their APP still having the measurable on the report issues. How did they rectify that in your own view? Because in the APP, they are still talking about those reports. Mr. Shabang.
Can you hear me, Chair?
No, I didn't hear. I'm not sure whether members did hear you. Members,
sorry, I was muted. I was muted, Chair.
Okay.
Yes. Chair, in my presentation, I mentioned that the department, remember previously, they limited us to the number of reports when they initially documented their TID and stuff. But now, I mentioned that now it will allow us, the way they document it, will allow us to consider the contents and interventions made by the department based on its mandate. So So we will not be limited to just looking at the report. We will interrogate the contents of the report, and that's what they will do as well from their side.
Oh, okay. No, they've not changed it on the APP. Still there. It's just you'll then, as you audit, you'll then look at the content of the report on the report. Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you very much for that.
Chairperson, you disappeared.
Okay, I'm saying that I'm using the phone. If I miss your hands, honorable members, it will not be deliberate. Just indicate that you have raised your hands. I don't see any hands now. I see honorable Chris Malematsa. Can I see other hands, honorable members? Honorable PT and Honorable Mankesini, Honorable Sekhwai, as I've identified you, you can proceed. Let's start with Honorable Malematsa. Honorable Malematsa, Honorable PT, Honorable Mankesini, Honorable Sekhwai, Honorable Tseki.
Thank you,
Honorable Malematsa, start. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Let me follow suit and agree that we welcome the presentation. Short, straight to the point. Very comprehensive to understand how they do their work. However, Comrade Chair, in slide 7 and 6, when Shabangu was speaking, he spoke of some findings which had no impact and they were later all corrected. Chair, I want to bring this point that a finding is a finding. It will be very proper and appreciated that he speak to us on those findings so that in future we are aware that they won't come, and even if they were corrected, and how, what measures have they put in place to ensure that they are prevented. The second question will be, I'm saying that this report itself, it has got the good and the bad. One of the good things I realize is on the pre-active review 2023-2024, where it seems like in terms of misalignment, they are on par because there are a number of improvements. I think there, Comrade Chair, credit must go where it should. On the third aspect is the extended mandate. I think, Chair, it must be emphasized that the public out there want to see results. Now, with these powers extended to them, what powers do they have, especially when they are dealing with the recommended material irregularities referred to NPA, FIU, in terms of time frame, so that people can see the result while the matter is still on? Because this thing of taking long is what makes the people, if not the public, to lose trust on the relevant authorities that are working with them. And that automatically affect them, as if they are getting these things and they are referring them and there are no follow-ups, therefore it's as good as it was not referred. But if it's done within a short space of time and people see results, where people are to go to jail, where refund can be made to public, the Bankara, the 3.3 million being seen coming back, those who are supposed to face the might law do that. I think that can assist. Let me pause. Yeah, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Mpiti.
Thank you, Chair. Very good morning to all colleagues. I would also like to welcome the presentation and just submit just three questions that I would like clarity on. The first one will really be on page 10 of the presentation. And I suppose what I'm trying to understand here is that the report quite rightly states that there's been a misalignment in regards to the targets, particularly in the EPP, which was something that I raised in the previous meeting. But I would just really like to understand in that reference in page 10, what exactly are those TIDs that are misaligned, particularly for the department, DHS. I think it would be interesting just to unpack that particular point for us to understand exactly what it is referring to. And then the next point is just around page 17, which refers to the responsible officials and disciplinary processes. And I'm just surprised that it's at zero. I mean, when you look at some of these findings that are made, particularly of people who have clearly benefited in an inappropriate way, and people who have acted quite clearly in breach of policies, have really gone far and beyond what is expected in terms of someone who is in a position to be able to be accountable. They have clearly failed. And so I'm just wondering, what were the reasons for that particular figure of zero to be, you know, to simply be that? Has the department, has the entities been unable to actually find these individuals and be able to you know, pursue consequence management? Because we can't be on the one hand told about consequence management, but when this particular report comes, it shows that there's absolutely no consequence management happening. Particularly looking at slide 15, one would be expecting some form of consequence management within these provinces. So I just would like to understand how was that information, what period is it representing, and is it in alignment with the findings that the AG has found for that particular figure to be zero? Just some clarity around that issue. And then there was a part in the presentation that referred to payments that were made to contractors that had delivered poor quality houses. And I would just like an expansion on that particular part of the presentation. There was a figure that was given in terms of the financial loss that was incurred. But can we just have an expansion particularly on that point? And just to maybe understand how far that particular issue is in terms of tracking and in terms of understanding how that particular houses were approved with the fact that they had low quality tools and infrastructure that were used to produce those particular houses. I'll stop there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Makasini.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation of the AG. My question, I think Mr. Mpiti, Honorable Mpiti, on the issue of the targets that we're missing, if they can give us exactly which are those targets, so that when we do oversight, we are able to pinpoint to assist the department. My issue is the issue of the projects of G-Hostel in Velco and the projects of Kronstadt and overpayment. How far is the investigation? Because those projects is almost 10 years to 12 years now that has been there and stuck, and there's no investigation. As the powers of the AG has been extended, if they can give us an update, how far are they whether they have started with their investigation to make sure they those people who were in part of those projects, they pay the money that we're supposed to pay, or whether the project is continue, because I'm not sure whether the contractor is still on the site, especially in Jewel State, and the overpayment of Kronstadt. Also, if they can give us a detailed report, what are they doing for now? The process is when, so that we know whether we are moving or we are not moving. On the issue of the Eastern Cape, of the dispute between the accounting officer of the 23 million, maybe when are they going to give us the updated, maybe they have time frame so that they resolve the dispute between the province and them, so that when they come back to the portfolio committee, they give us a progressive report. We are not going to get again, the dispute must be resolved in a time frame. If they can give us the time frame to resolve the misunderstanding between them and the department of the province of the Eastern Cape.
Thank you very much, Honorable Makaseni. Honorable Sekwai.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the platform, the members, officials, and also AG. The appreciating the presentation.
Sorry, Chair. Hello, Mama Sly. Chairperson, when Kaluma Muslai are removed, Glenda, I am going in a local regalia, yake. Because we are in a committee.
Ms. Sly, you know the rules. Can you please remove the lock?
Aw, ibonong ba ni na?
That is understandable, but this picture has been put by IT literate people. I have to speak to them to remove it. I'm trying to remove it, as you can see, but seemingly it's technically constructed. Can I make an apology for today and say, you want to say it again? Because I have to consult them to take it away. Could that be accepted?
No, Mam Sky. Otherwise, you are not going to speak. I don't want to.
What must I do?
I'm trying to get somebody to remove it for now, and then you'll come back to ask your questions.
Agreed.
Okay. Honorable Zeki.
Hey, Chair. Talebo. O tla fumana bona ba dikentse mona ba balwana o rarre ba ditlose. Okay, re go leta be. Chair. There's a statement on the presentation that says, if we are not focusing on improving the public sector culture, then we are not going to win. Can't remember as it goes to the end. But it's saying we are not going to correct the material findings that we normally get. Can the department and AG Auditor General give us the improvement on that focusing on the public sector culture? Do they see change? Can we state that maybe in the coming year or so, that public sector culture will be improved? I assume this public sector culture is about professionalism, doing right even no one is watching, those kind of good things of good governance. Chair, maybe I misunderstood. The current report that we are getting from the AG, it's not necessarily talking to the performance of the department, that we are going to receive as an annual report in the coming future. Because they are talking about the repetitive issues that the department has committed. Now, where did they get that information? Is that information for 2023? I mean, 2022, 2023, or is it information before that time? Because the department has not yet presented the annual report. Or as treasury, because they work with the department on an ongoing basis, they could have found something. So if you remember, this is one of the issues that is very important for treasury to raise. Because the APP should seek to correct the previous issues that could have been committed by any institution. Now, because at the time when we do APP, we don't have the annual report, that there's a discrepancy there. Can Treasury comment on that? This is just a general question, Chair. Department has got entities. You know, there's a graph there where you are showing green and one or two on the MIs and the like. If two entities are found wanting, can the department be clean? Just a general question. I know, you know, in terms of the independency of these of these entities, because at the end of the day, these entities are appointed by the department, are oversighted by the department as much as a committee, we do oversight. So if whatever the national NHBRC could be found wanting, is that not automatically implicate the department that is also found wanting? I'm trying to strengthen the oversight of the department on my question. And there's where you are saying the MI, one of the powers and last resort, I think you were mentioning three steps. When you say last resort, what does that mean? If that last resort, can you give us an example? Have you ever put someone on consequence management because of the powers given to yourself in any other department, not certainly in ours? And what is the process of that finding? I think the G Gauteng, you said there's a forensic report that you are waiting for. It goes back to what Comrade Chris was saying on the time frame. There's an MI, I think it's Free State, the 443. The three MIs are on remedial phase. Can you expand remedial of actions now that are going to be taken by the AG? Remedial phase, in particular on the Free State. On the Eastern Cape, for the 23 million presented, is there any actions that we need to take to those people that committed that? What is the AG's role or comment on that for taking the consequence management? Because if the AG stopped it, someone should have seen it before the AG could have stopped that something is wrong here. And what actions are we taking on those individuals? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Seki, Honorable Dr. Khumalo. Honorable Dr. Khumalo.
Honorable Dr. Khumalo. Honorable members, can you hear, Doctor?
Is Dr. Khumalo, Chair, you are audible enough?
Okay, Doctor, can you fix your gadget? Dr. Khumalo?
Chair, I think she's unmuted. I've just sent her a message to unmute.
Okay. Dr. Khumalo?
Chair, it's just not working out today. I was being kicked out, etc. A bit short, Chairperson. I just wanted to find out when the AG started to the general outcome of material findings referred to relevant public bodies for investigations have been. So how has that worked? How are they finding referring these cases to relevant public bodies has been in terms of the time frames and the impact of in terms of consequences, because they do raise the fact that historically they haven't had the powers, rather. And I also wanted to find out just get clarity as to what examples of remedial action do they take for failure the recommendation? Especially in this department, rather, specifically, we've seen the HDA, for example, sitting with, findings for long periods of time. And then also the certificates, I wanted to just also get clarity for empowerment around the certificates of death being issued and what that actually means in real terms or in practical terms, what the outcome of issuing accounting specifically. I think I'll stop there, Chairperson, because some of the questions I did ask.
Doctor, Honorable Sekrai, have you managed to remove that technical logo issue?
Morning, Chair. I have tried with IT.
You can see.
Member, just connect on the other gadget.
I tried to connect on the other gadget. Let me
close,
call it a day.
Just close, Honorable Sufai. Close your camera and speak from the dark. You will not speak as long as this ANC thing is on the screen.
Hey, the better, I'm partial.
I'm trying to do that. Is it still there?
Yes.
Where is my camera?
Just go out, Honorable Sokwai, and get technical help, and then from there, in the meantime, we'll proceed, and then you can actually maybe ask question if it's not captured when the auditor general is responding. Go out.
All right.
Let me allow Auditor General to respond on the issues. It's still on the screen. Okay, thank you very much. Auditor General, the team from Auditor General.
Chairperson, thank you. While Kuku is just preparing to respond to some of the detailed questions, maybe there is one or two that I would like to respond from my side. The first one is in terms of the delays when it comes to the referrals. So the material irregularity process identifies there is a material non-compliance, fraud or theft, and that there is a financial loss or harm to this material irregularity. They then have time to respond. They respond. Of responses is to say, the PFMA, there is material irregularities or irregular expenditure, there must be an investigation. People must be held accountable. The control environment must be enhanced. The processes, the review processes, all of those must be improved so that they first of all stop that irregularity, number one. And then number two, prevent it from going forward. So that is what we will look at when we assess the responses to see whether it's sufficient in line with what the PFMA is asking an accounting officer to do when they identify instances of irregularities. If the responses is not sufficient and if the department or entity don't implement those steps that we've initially assessed as being sufficient, then we go into the next step. The next step is then either to see whether we will include recommendations in the audit report, which is then enforceable, or whether we refer. Usually we refer where there's an indication of fraud or when there's the specific area where we feel a public body is better positioned and their mandate is more leaning towards the actions and the impact that we're expecting. I do agree, we started with this process, we have referrals, we are currently refining the processes. So we've entered into MOAs with these public bodies that we're referring to, setting out the agreement between ourselves, what is expected, their role. What we've been clear about is to say that we can't intervene in their mandate. So they need to continue to execute what they are mandated to do. But there needs to be feedback to us and progress. Currently, we do see that there is delays in some of this referrals, and we are engaging with those public bodies, with the relevant executives to see how can we refine the process our annual reports on the status. So last year, there was the MI report, but this year, But I think we're in agreement that there is still teething problems, things that we need to sort out, and we are trying to refine it so that we are the public moving with us and that we do get that information in time so that we can respond. There was a question also on the culture and do we see a change in public sector culture? So what we see, the ultimate culture is then in terms of integrity, accountability, transparency, a culture where things are doing, where the right things are being done, as the member also said, even when people aren't looking, where there's accountability and integrity. So this is our, the AGSA's strategic objective and what we are working towards. We only started last year. So this year is a baseline that where we assess auditees to see where in the continuum they sit. So we have looking at auditees doing good, where there's a positive impact. We're looking at auditees and we look at the spectrum from doing harm to doing good. So once we current performance year that we started, we'll then start evaluating, saying that we insights. We also want to use that insight to be so compelling of our stakeholders. To an improved level where they can eventually get to a point. Not at the point to say that we definitely see improvement. As I say, this is by years. At least didn't regress or also shown some improvement. And yeah, I think we just need a bit of time and this is a journey that thank you.
Now, thank you, Corne, for that. I will not focus on the questions where Corne provided responses. Honorable Chris Malimata, sorry, you'll forgive me. I'm still finding come out the way I intended to. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, all findings are important and all of them have an impact. I didn't mean to imply that some of the correct myself there. Yeah, that's what I meant. I didn't come out correctly. And the other one, but the one on MIs for Honorable Chris, Honorable Nomaku, the one on page 10, which indicates in the department, we were referring to, for example, the one on in program 5, National Implementation Plan for Blocked Projects Implemented. where we're saying the indicator is about implementation of the national implementation plan block project, while the target is about the development of the national implementation plan for block project. So you see there's misalignment there between the indicator and the target. We are saying the target is not consistent with the indicator for that particular indicator, Honorable Member. The other one is under Program 4, percentage implementation of the National Rental Housing Plan, where the definition provided is not clear, as there is monitoring, implementation support, training and support provided it's not defined today. It is not clear what is this indicator about. This is the initial finding that we raised before the department went and revised their APP. So we are saying that the achievement of the indicator is measured qualitatively, but the percentage is a quantitative measure. So the indicator is talking about percentages, but the technical indicator was talking about a qualitative measure. That is the misalignment that we're referring to, Honorable Nomakhutla. On slide 17, Honorable Nomakhutla, where you asked us why is the disciplinary hearing zero? I think, Honorable Member, in my presentation, I highlighted that we are still in the process of gathering the information around this area from our provincial colleagues, the seven provinces, actually the six, because KZN, Mpumalanga, and Western Cape, there's no need for them to share with us. So we are in the process of gathering that information. It doesn't mean it's zero. It's zero for as of today because we have not yet gathered all the information. I would like to emphasize that. And the other one, Honorable Nomakhutla, around payments made to contractors that delivered poor quality. I think talking to the Limpopo 2MIs, which are under consultation stage, were indicated that we have not yet finalized the process to confirm that they are MIs. So we are still consulting with our technical unit to come up with a conclusion. So we are still in the process of finalizing that MI process, Honorable Member. Honorable Makasini, the G-Hostel and Kroonstad MIs in Free State, where you asked where is the process. I think in my presentation, I mentioned that we are at the remedial phase, which means that we have tried the action plan and the accounting officer didn't meet our timelines. And that means the implemented actions were not satisfactory. And then we moved to the recommendation phase, where we also gave the accounting officer the timelines to implement the corrective action, and the accounting officer still failed to implement those. And now we are moving to a remedial phase, a binding phase, whereby now it is no longer a recommendation. We are at a phase at which they have to implement those, failing which we move to the certificate of debt stage, where the monies will have to be recovered. And the Eastern Cape one, Honorable Makasini, indicated in my presentation that we are still consulting with our technical unit because the accounting officer is disagreeing with us on this one. And with regards to the timelines, I will have to come back to you on this one with your permission, Honorable Chairperson, because I don't want to commit to timelines. And then if I don't meet them, then there'll be problems for me. With your permission, Chair, can we come back to you with timelines for that one? And Honorable Becky, I'm going to cover the first one around the public sector culture change. The second one from you, Honorable Member, was about the report being the performance report for 2022, as you are not aware of any performance reports from the department. I think from our side, no, sir, this is, here we're just reviewing the APP for 2023-24, so we have not assessed the performance. We're just looking at the usefulness of the indicators that are included in the 2023-2024 APP. So we'll test it in the next audit cycle next year. For now, we're just doing a value add exercise to ensure that some of the issues are addressed now before we audit it next year. And with regards to my comment on the 21-22 audit outcomes, I was saying that for the portfolio, the National Department of Human Settlements didn't have any material findings on the usefulness side when we presented to you last year during the budget review and recommendation report sessions in October. And the other one from you, it's what did I mean by last resort on certificate of debt? What I meant was, like I mentioned in the G Hostel and Kroonstad, where we said everything else is failing. Now we are at the remedial stage, where now our recommendations are no longer just recommendations; they are binding, just like a public protector's recommendation. But should this binding recommendations, so this binding remedial actions not be implemented, we will move to a certificate of debt, which is the last resort, where money has to be recovered from the responsible accounting officer or accounting authority, because they would have failed to hold the responsible people accountable. So, yeah. And the other one from you, Honorable Member, I think I've answered it when I answered the previous one, because it was asking what does remedial phase mean for the three FSMIs. I think I answered it when I answered Honorable Marcassini's question on G-Hosted and Kroonstad. And the other one from you, Honorable Member, is there any action that needs to be taken for consequence management?
It's the G-Hostel in Welkomstad, not Kroonstad.
No, I said G Hostel and Kroonstad, because they are two. They are separate.
Okay.
Thank you. Consequence management needs to be taken, and we are trying to enforce it through our MIs. Because first time we tell you, before we even move to the recommendation phase, we agree, we sit with the accounting officer and the accounting authority. We say, here's the MI. Give us your action plan. How are you going to resolve this issue? Come up with measures to prevent this from recurring, and also to recover if there's a need to recover. And we give him or her the timelines. And if they fail, we move to the recommendation phase. Because amongst those actions, there we expect consequence management. For example, like I mentioned when I was presenting that for Northwest, we are not happy at the moment because the accounting officer must still implement the disciplinary hearing where necessary and start the recovery process and show us, is he or she now engaging on disciplinary processes? So consequence management is embedded in the MI process. Honorable Kumalo, Dr. Kumalo, I think Cornel responded to some of your questions. What are examples of remedial? I'm not sure if Cornel responded to that one, where you said AHA has many repeat findings. Because remedial action, it comes to the accounting officer having to discipline a member of his staff establishment. Because it's no longer now a recommendation, it's binding remedial action. We are telling him to quit. We are not asking him anymore. We are telling him to enforce the laws as prescribed in the PFMA or Treasury regulations and so forth. And also to recover, a remedial action can also talk to the accounting officer to recover funds from the implicated individuals in his or her department, as well as suppliers. If the suppliers were implicated and they were paid and they were not supposed to be paid, remedial action can include instructed the accounting officer to recover funds from those suppliers that benefited unduly. And the other question from you, Honorable Dr. Kumalo, was a certificate of debt being issued. What does it mean? Is it only impacting the residents or the accounting officer? It impacts everyone. It impacts the accounting officer or the accounting authority in the sense that if it's issued against the accounting officer, he or she will have to pay the respective amount, and it benefits the residents or the citizens in a sense that the money would have been refunded into the public purse and back to the fiscus. The financial loss would have been recouped through the MI process. Therefore, the money can be used maybe for other service delivery initiatives. With your permission, I think I try to answer all questions, unless if I miss any question, I'm open to YouTube.
Thank you very much, Auditor General, for the response. Honorable Sesuai, are you back?
Yes, I am. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me start with you. I see other hands for follow-up questions.
Chair, let me make a formal apology on such a behavior, which I think it was an error on my side. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Just a few areas of clarity from the Auditor General. I'm sure Uma Mutafeni is happy with that nice picture of his mama. My worry with Auditor General, I think I raised it even last time. I do not know their powers. In my view, they have powers that they are listening to. By departments. And in my understanding, in terms of their brief, their legal brief, is already addressed the issues of the impact that needs to be evaluated from different departments, provinces and municipalities. Because this is about creating value for money. The absence of that and delays result to some other issues of SIUs, MPAs, and all those issues, which take some years. But and the contractor that has done that is getting other contracts all over the country. And the official that have made that overpayment is able to deal with matters. Now, the Auditor General must tell us the environment analyzed, very unethical, And the AG is the immediate area to address. Actions. I just wanted to start with that because I find it important to listen to the AG. An empowerment. What is CISOs doing? In lack of understanding of that, you are unable to understand the indicators that drive them, which is an authority for them to do their work, and you understand even their target. You, in your assessment, What is your understanding with CISOs? The other area, Chair, is the issue of an official who has made an overpayment to a contractor. There are red lights, a red flag there. And it is withdrawn when it is identified. It's withdrawn. What's that? An amount of 23 million. It's been stopped. What's that? And what is happening about that official? Who has done that? We can't let it go. The other one, which is this, the second last chair, is the, how does the CFO, when an upper body has arrived and identified an erroneous action, let me put it that way, and then the CFO disagrees, and it takes some time to address the issue. What does that mean? What does that mean? And also the issue of the process that you are raising, that you address that official, you go to remedial phase, you go to certificate of debt. The country is in crisis in terms of corrupt practices. And to me, you are the first point of call outside the institution. And seemingly these processes, I'm not sure how are they helping the unethical conduct that you are confronted with as government. The last one is your nice one that you've raised, that you expect that you'll be embarking on 30% with 2030 audit. Yo, so this is real. The country would be gone by that time. I don't understand what are your critical elements to drag it so far than now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sufai. I have Honorable Zeki, Honorable Nolifuyo, Dr. Kumal on the follow-up questions. Honorable members, if you can see the time is 25 to 11. So if we can shorten our so that we can have answers, your follow-up answers. I've given Mask Fry because of the problem that he had in the beginning. Honorable Mpiti, Honorable Doctor, and Honorable Makasin. I see Honorable Zeki, you have dropped your hands. Is it Liga's hand? It was the Liga's hand?
Yes,
okay. All right. Proceed, Honorable Mpiti. Honorable Mpiti, proceed.
It was a legacy hand.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm just going to go back on a follow-up in regards to, again, the page 17 of the PowerPoint presentation. I don't really think the question was really ventilated in my view, because what I had asked was in relation to the issues that I have been found, particularly on financial loss, how exactly has the AG responded to the finding of zero officials being found or being identified, particularly on a disciplinary process? No processes that are in the works, because in my view is that we cannot simply identify matters of financial loss as they've been listed on slide 15 and simply say that, you know, with those particular MIs, that there is no process, at least in the least, that has begun, because in my view it doesn't inspire any confidence to say that these issues, though they are being identified, though they are saying that this official has been found to have overpaid or has been found to have acted in a way that is inappropriate, there has been no process or any initiation of a process. To me, it sounds not correct, Chair. It sounds not correct. So, you know, yes, we've been responded to in regards to the remedial aspects of the response, but you know there must be some form of causality between what is identified and what then follows after the identification of that lack of accountability, the unethicalness of how officials have conducted themselves, particularly in the provinces that have been outlined. So mine is simply to say that can more information be given to say that are there processes in the works? How long will they take? How many of these processes have been successful or have at least been initiated? Because it cannot be that we just simply have zero action taken by the auditees as outlined. So just to understand how the AG connects the processes on this particular point to the auditees and the processes that they found. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpiti. I think the Auditor General, it says that as they were coming to this meeting, they have not actually engaged with the department to get the department to answer for themselves. So that's why it's zero. So when they come back again, because if we in the previous meetings that we had with Auditor General, we said it would appreciate if we can engage with them even frequently. We should not wait for the outcome of the annual report or the annual report and wait for that outcome of the annual report and come and say, the audit findings of that other financial year has not been responded to. It will be good if the Auditor General can, in the meantime, in the middle of the year, come to us as portfolio committee, so that ourselves, as we're going to meet with the department, we can actually say raise the same issues, so that we strengthen the oversight from both ourselves and Auditor General. So, but I will allow Mr. Shabangu to talk to it again. Honorable Doctor?
Just a quick one on that point, if you would allow me.
Yes.
In my view, then it becomes problematic to then receive a report that does not, that reports on one aspect but doesn't report on the other. And I'm not sure if you've captured me there, but I'm saying that it's an incomplete report because what we have the one report of what has been identified, but yet on the other side, the work has not essentially taken place. So it makes it difficult then to have a proper analysis of what is being presented if, as you have pointed out, that the AG's office has not consulted with the department as yet. And so to present this doesn't really give us an accurate view, or at least myself, an accurate view of how the issues have been handled. Because you can't, on the one hand, identify issues and say this is what has been found in terms of overpayment, in terms of officials acting inappropriately, but then there is no causality to the aspect of how these issues are being handled. Because if I'm a South African watching this at home and I'm listening to how there's been MIs that have been found and contractors and officials who have behaved in a way that is not of a responsible and accountable nature and in fact is corrupt, then I'm going to ask myself, what then has been done? And if the response is simply to say that the report has not consulted with the relevant department heads, et cetera, then for me, it makes me feel as though nothing is actually being done about these issues. So as an elected member of parliament, my role now is being stopped to do proper oversight because the information is not there. So I just need to understand that because it is not a fair view for me to then comment on something that is not clear.
Okay, Honourable Member, I'm not an auditor general. Let me leave it at that. They'll respond because we're not understanding it the same way. Honourable Dr. Khumalo.
I'll try and be very quick. I wanted to know what the, now that I understand the processes and, you know, my questions have been answered, what has been the success in terms of accounting officers actually disciplining, employees that are in question? And also, I mean, I do know the MSMA and the PMSMA and all of it subscribes, but has there been cases where accounting officers have actually themselves been held accountable and, you know, some outcomes and findings that will positively, you know, benefit residents? Because we do know accounting officers are often also, in some cases, implicated. I also wanted to know if there are any certificates, Chair, that are issued currently on the certificates of death issued in the department or its entities currently. Since last year, I think these powers have been granted since last year as per my question. And also, what's the view on approach on projects that have, you know, lost money for many years? Is this going to be, are these actions that the AG have powers to do now going to be retrospective, or, you know, do those simply go scot-free? I mean, we've got lots of projects in this department that, you know, money was lost and money disappeared. And I think you'll know as audit, you know, accountants, which I'm not an expert at, that I do know, you know, these service providers get these projects, huge amounts, and then they don't perform and then they go and claim insolvency or something like that. I'm not sure what the term is. And then, you know, there's no money to recover. What happens in those instances as well? And lastly, Chairperson, I wanted to find out how the relationship or how strong the relationship is between the AG and law enforcement authorities that they work with, in as far as and what the monitoring capacity over the cases that they refer. So does the buck stop at the AG, makes a recommendation to law enforcement agencies and say, please investigate this? To what extent is there a follow-up, and to what extent or what powers would they have as an entity to, you know, take up cases that they've referred for law, for investigations by the relevant departments that don't act. And we've got cases that are going on for over 15 years where money has been lost, where it's quite clear that corruption has happened. To what extent does the AG have monitoring powers, and what would be the step, you know, if you know, timelines are not adhered to, that the AG sends these things for investigation? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nolvuyo Tafeni. Honorable Tafeni. Honorable Tafeni.
Thank you, Chairperson. The network yangishaye Pelican Park bawo. Yo. Ngosi Chairperson, greetings to the members of the committee and the AG committee. Chairperson, the Auditor General is coming to the committee with without preparations, because when it comes, you are coming to the committee supposed to prepare it, more special about entities. There is many loopholes in this report. So for the next time, the AG is supposed to come to the committee with prepared, because we have a challenge of these entities, more special CISOs. We are not... So that is only that submission, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Honorable Seki. Honorable Seki.
No, Chair, thank you very much. As I said, my hand was off. Now, I was trying to say, Chair, I think we need to be careful to put the wrongs of the department on the Auditor General, but use the Auditor General as a guide to empower us to do oversight on the department. That's my comment, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Seki. Auditor General.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Let me respond. Let me first just apologize to Honorable Mopiti in terms of, you know, the information. I think from our side, what we will do is to engage with our provincial colleagues, and even before the next meeting that we have with you, to give you an update on exactly how far those disciplinary steps is. I understand where you're coming from, because obviously the process might not have been concluded in terms of the full disciplinary process, but surely there is processes that have started. So if I can just ask from your side that we then be allowed the opportunity to get that information and give you a breakdown of where exactly they are in all of these different steps. And hopefully that will empower you to then also perform the oversight role from the PC side. I think in terms of the MISO, we didn't get the powers last year. We the first year was in 2018-19 roundabout, but we started with a phased-in approach. So for the first year, it was less than 20 PFMA auditees, and then there was also a few selected MFMA auditees that we started with. We've also started in that year with a phase in terms of the definition. So the first year we've only looked at the financial losses, and then only after that we started looking at the fraud and the harm elements. So it has been a phased in process to allow ourselves also to build capacity. But we rely that the processes should be fully implemented now. It's come to a maturity level, and we are working and focusing on identifying those quality impact MIs that will really make a difference. So in terms of where we are with the MIs that we've issued as an organization to date, we haven't issued any certificate of debt as an organization to date. In terms of the process, there is auditees up to remedial action, and we are assessing the implementation of that remedial action. I always see the process as the BFMA is giving the accounting officer responsibilities to manage and to lead the entity or the department, or equally then to the accounting authority. They also have the responsibility to, when things didn't go according to the regulations or law, to then implement corrective steps, starting with, as I said, investigations, seeing what is the appropriate corrective actions, to implement that, to have the disciplinary, to recover losses where possible, to follow processes, to recover money where there was financial losses, whether it's from the supplier or if it's found to be internal breakdown and where people were negligent. It remains the responsibility of the accounting officer to implement those corrective actions. Our responsibility is then to give the notification, to assess how it's being implemented. And if we then get to a point after notification, after recommendation, after remedial action, where it still hasn't happened, then we can go over to the certificate of debt process, where the certificate of debt is then specifically issued to the accounting officer or to the accounting authority, who then becomes responsible for that financial loss. And it's basically because at that point, it is then concluded that the accounting officer failed to implement his or her responsibility as granted to him or delegated to the accounting officer authority in terms of the BFMA. So it's a long process. We haven't issued any certificates of debt as yet. As I say, at this stage, our most advanced stages is at the remedial and us assessing the implementation of those remedial actions. The remedial actions that we will include, or what we typically will include, is to say the accounting officer must quantify the financial loss. If they haven't done an investigation, it will say they must go and do an investigation, identify the all the people that is responsible for the breakdown, to identify where they can recover, and to improve the internal controls where necessary. That will usually be the line of the remedial actions, depending on what they have done or haven't done up to that point in time. I do think that at the end of the day, I did start off this morning by referring to the accountability ecosystem. And once again, I think everybody needs to play their role in this: accounting officer, audit committees that is there, and then equally Parliament and ourselves. And we'll try and enhance our insights to you so that we can also empower you better in terms of entities. I'm just trying to see. I think there's something else that I wanted to mention. Sorry, Chairperson. I think that is from my side. I just wanted to clarify that process and where we are and what we have done as an organization to now. And I just wanted to emphasize that at the end of the day, we are all role players in this process. And if we want to see a culture shift in the country, I suppose it is for all role players in their specific areas to also contribute and support the process. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shabangu. Anything to add?
Thank you. I think from my side, I'm covered. But with your permission, maybe just to highlight with regards to preparing for this session, I think we were to provide feedback on the MI's feedback since last year and the AOPO 2023-24 review feedback. I think we did that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Auditor General, you have done your best. You have done the good job in terms of what we have requested you to come and brief the committee on. I think members, what we need to do, as the department will be coming to us
for the second quarter report and the third quarter, we should actually use the same report again to ask the department. You would know that in most instances, the provincial, the audit outcomes of provinces, department, when we interact with them, we don't get what has happened in the provinces, and calling the Auditor General here was to source those information so that when the department comes to here, they are part of us in this meeting. When they come to second quarter, the quarter report to come to report to the committee, they have to actually respond to the issues that you have, like what the Auditor General has said, that they've not had the feedback on some of the issues that what had happened in the provinces. The department seated in this meeting, they would have to go and actually go back and engage the provinces. When they come to the report, then they must answer those questions, because that's why we wanted to interlink all the oversight mechanisms so that all of us who are helping one another, as the executive has indicated, that at the ultimate end, there is that improvement in the system of accountability throughout the country. And we want to welcome and appreciate the report, which we will then use as we're going to engage with the department for them to be able to respond on issues that we think you've not reported on AG. National Treasury, there was a question on yourself. As you start presenting, you'll then start by answering that question.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Sorry, before you start, Honorable Khumalo says the question were not responded through the chat. Can I ask Auditor General, because their time has lapsed, to answer those questions in writing and submit them through the committee secretary for Honorable Dr. Khumalo. Honorable Doctor.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, that is also fine. I just wonder if they are aware, but I'll send Kolisoa what I believe hasn't been answered, and hopefully then I can get the answers, no problem.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. Sorry.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Jan Hatten. I'm from the National Treasury in the Intergovernmental Relations Division. I'm responsible for municipal budgets and leading the team that's with us today. So, Chair, if I can firstly introduce our team, and if they can be so kind just to show their faces and introduce themselves. My first colleague that's with me is Ughali. She's responsible for provincial budgets and the implementation of the conditional grants for provinces. Ughali, if you can introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Ughala Letseng, or Ughali as Jasian has called me, Parekwe, responsible for the portfolio that you just spoke about. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ughali. With her is a gentleman with the name Emmanuel Belay. Emmanuel, if you can introduce yourself. Emmanuel, we can't see you. Please unmute yourself. We still can't hear you, Emmanuel. Chair, I think Emmanuel's got a technical problem, but at least you've seen him. Emmanuel, if you can in the meantime just try to solve your audio issue. I have with us Vincelo Machado. Java, Honorable Chair, he's on my side. He's responsible for municipal conditional grant monitoring and oversight. Cello, if you can introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chairperson, and to honorable members also. And good morning to my colleagues from the department and from within National Treasury. My name is Cello Mashaba, and I work for the National Treasury. My direct responsibility is to monitor the performance of the conditional grants for municipalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Cello. And the last colleague that we have with us is Lesepa Pakis. Lesepa, if you can introduce yourself. Lesepa. Chairperson, I seems to struggle to, I know he was with us in the meeting. Lesepa is from a team, Honorable Chair, that is responsible for putting the Annual Division of Revenue Act together. Presenting it to Parliament, and once Parliament has enacted it, then Ughali-san and myself is the two officials with our support team that oversee the implementation for these two, from a provincial and a municipal perspective. So Chairperson, I would answer the question just now. Just want to see if it's possible where I can just, if the honorable members can see the presentation.
Yes, we can see the presentation.
We can see it.
Thank you so much, sir. So essentially what we have prepared, Chairperson, is to, this is the outline of the presentation. I'll make a couple of introductory remarks. So firstly, we would like to present the committee and the honorable members with a legislative background. Firstly, the stopping and reallocation process from a provincial perspective, and then specifically the results for the two grants that's been transferred or allocated to the provinces. Then there was a specific question on the stopping reallocation process for the metropolitan municipalities, and then also the specific results for the USDG and the ISUPG municipal grants, and then obviously the considerations and the thought process that went into these processes. So Chairperson, to answer the question as far as the APP is concerned, from Honorable Tseki. So Chair, if you analyze the Public Finance Management Act carefully, you will come to the conclusion that there's three processes that any department go through simultaneously. So firstly, we are as a department or institution busy closing the books of a previous financial year that then gets submitted to the Office of the Auditor General for auditing. Secondly, we are busy implementing the current year of a financial year. And thirdly, Chair, at the same time, preparing the planning for the next budget cycle. So all these three processes run concurrently. And the design of the Public Finance Management Act has been done in order to equip accounting offices, provincial and national departments and municipalities. So by the time they conclude the budget and the strategic plans, that the APPs that is in their documentation has been informed for the most relevant information possible. So Chair, to answer the question specifically, as during the main budget and when the departments present the APPs to Parliament, the targets has been set based on the resources allocated and based on historical information and performance. Chair, then the next thing is at the point of changing the budget, and that's during the adjustment budget process, there is the opportunity for departments, institutions, and provinces and municipalities to change the targets based on the implementation experience. So Chair, I hope that that assists the Honourable Member on the question, at what point is the APP then concluded, and what's the vehicle through which you can change it? And the information flow is a consistent process. So Honourable Chair, before I proceed, I just want to pause here and see if that response is sufficient to assist the Honourable Tsepke.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you.
Thanks so much. So Chair, the background information, I would like to just make a couple of remarks. I'll present two slides, then Ughali and her team will do the provincial inputs, and then Sela is going to assist us with the municipal inputs. So Chairperson, the Annual Division of Revenue Act is now with us for approximately 21 years. Chairperson, it's a requirement in terms of section 227 of the Constitution. It's the only annual piece of legislation, largely, that the minister table every year together with a budget. Chairperson, as part of the Division of Revenue Bill, the Honourable Members, I'm sure, are aware that for each type of grant, there's what we refer as a conditional grant framework. Chairperson, that is the basis. So firstly, with that grant, all the conditions, the criteria, what it's meant to achieve. And that grant framework, Chairperson, is then the basis for the Auditor General to audit the performance when it comes to that specific grant. Chairperson, what's also important to recognize, the Treasury is very clear that we understand that policy formulation is the sector department's responsibility. So that's vested in the minister and the national department with all its entities. So the Treasury understand that. However, Chair, fiscal arrangements is the mandate of the Treasury. And sometimes that in itself could potentially cause challenges. But it's important to understand the difference or the deviation. Chairperson, for the benefit of a committee, although we focus today on the human settlements portfolio, it's important to know that on the provincial side, there's approximately 24 different conditional grants, which Ughali and Emmanuel is responsible for the monitoring part, as well as the oversight in conjunction with the national sector department that's responsible for that specific grant. And on the local government side, Chairperson, we've got approximately 23 grants. So Chair, as is to make sure that we keep all our clients busy. You can imagine that our first client that we would like to keep happy is Parliament, then all the sector departments, all the provinces and municipalities. Chair, and I assume you will agree with me that it's almost an impossible task, but that is largely what is contained in the Division of Revenue Bill. The information that should be very helpful to the members is contained in Annex W1, Chair, of the annual bill, where we explained in detail how the allocations have been formulated, the criteria, Chairperson, what's also important is that the committee members, I'm sure, is familiar with the fact that the financial years at the national and provincial level is slightly different from the financial years at the municipal level. So at the national financial year starts in 1st of April and it ends on the 31st of March. Whereas the municipal financial year starts on the 1st of July and it ends on 30 June. Chair, this is critical given that there's always a quarter lag. So when we share with the committee the results, and I'll explain that for a minute, how that works, it's important that you'll always experience a quarter lag when it comes to municipal information. Chair, so this is what we would like to share with the committee. So the first slide is the policy decision for stopping reallocation, Chairperson. Historically, as I said, the Act is now about 21 years old. Historically, we had a lot of complaints from Parliament and our clients, where they've indicated the Division of Revenue Act is very rigid in the sense of if we allocate 100 rand to an institution and that institution do not spend the 100 rand, then as per the law, the unspent part automatically revert to the National Revenue Fund. So Parliament has then asked us to come up with a solution, Chair, and essentially what I'm about to share and what's the essence of our presentation is that policy choice that was then made and presented to Parliament. And Chair, I'll have to check, but I think it's about a good 10 or 15 years ago that change was brought into the equation. Chair, and it was deliberate because if Parliament allocate resources for service delivery and policy intentions, and if the money is not spent by the institutions, then obviously the money revert to the National Revenue Fund. And that is not the ideal state that one would like to find itself in. And again, we have an institutionalized processes, Chair, to safeguard the funding for provinces, to safeguard the funding for sectors, and safeguard the funding for municipalities. Chair, however, if for obvious reasons that will come through the presentation, that there's still under expenditure, then as a last resort, the funding gets surrendered to the National Revenue Fund. So Chairperson, that's just at the high level, the background information. So the next slide, Chair, I hope that you can see it and that it's on slideshow mode. The legislative background when it comes to the stopping and reallocation of grants is essentially contained, and the starting point for the Treasury's mandate is derived from Section 215 and 216 of a constitution that describe and underpin the both transparency and expenditure control. So essentially the whole design of the Public Finance Management Act, the Municipal Finance Management Act and DORA is to facilitate proper transparency, but also specifically the processes when it comes to expenditure control. As far as the Municipal Finance Management Act, Chair, there is a provision in Section 38 of the MFMA and in Section 2162 of the four provinces that in the event that stopping of funding is contemplated, that there must be proper consultation. So that's a critical part for the honorable members to be aware of. The actual clauses in the Annual Division of Revenue Act that then regulate this is Section 18 and 19 of the Division of Revenue Act, respectively. Chair, Section 18 states that the National Treasury, at its discretion or on the request of a transnational transferring officer or even a receiving officer, may stop transfer funds allocated in the schedules 4 and 5 to provinces and municipalities. The transfers are stopped if there is a serious or persistent breach of a DORA, read together with the other legislations that I referred to. Secondly, Chair, if the National Treasury, based on its own monitoring systems, and again, there's two parts that's important for the committee to know of. Firstly, on the national provincial level, there's a requirement in Section 32 of the Public Finance Management Act that national departments, provinces must report monthly to the National Treasury, Chair, and this is since the inception of the Act. And there's a requirement in Section 71 of the Municipal Finance Management Act that municipalities also report to national and provincial treasuries. And then there's the requirements in the Division of Revenue Act, where the departments that have conditional grants, the provinces report to the national department, they consolidate the information, they report to the National Treasury, and the same apply on the municipal side. So, Chair, based on the early warning or the monitoring systems that we've institutionalized, and we do publish the results for provinces and municipalities quarterly on our website, and I know that there's reports that the Treasury prepare for the appropriate committees in Parliament. So the National Treasury, if we anticipate information reported to us, we also could then explore to stop and reallocate funding. And thirdly, for purposes of assigning a function from a province to a municipality, Chair, that provision or that specific clause is not a frequent contender, if I can put it this way. Chair, the intention of funds being stopped is to ensure that funds are used for the intended purposes as appropriated by Parliament while ensuring transparency and expenditure control. If funds are stopped and they end up not being used for the intended purposes, Chair, we have seen that it at the same time, Chair, in most of these cases, the funding is borrowed, and therefore it's in the public interest that we make sure that the funds appropriated by Parliament for this purpose is being used productively and for the intended purpose. As far as Section 19 is concerned, It states when a Schedule Form 5 allocation are stopped, the National Treasury may, after consulting with a transferring officer and the relevant provincial treasury, determine that a portion of the allocation be allocated as the same type of allocation. So, Chair, we try to make sure that it stay within the specific purposes. It's not always 100% possible, but a portion can be relocated for the same type of allocation as originally intended. Secondly, that it could be reallocated to one or more provinces or even to a municipality on condition that the allocation must be spent by the end of that financial year. Now, Chairperson, it's an annual piece of legislation. It's important that the funding being used in that financial year. The law allows, if the money is not spent in time, that you can request, because this money is being allocated as part of the national sphere of government for a policy intent in the space of the province or the municipality. Section 19 further states that if a transferring officer of a Schedule 6 allocation indicate to the Treasury in advance that there is going to be a possibility, Chair, that the money will not be spent and it needs to be reprioritized, then it's possible that the Treasury and the transferring officer can determine a portion be reallocated. So again, within the same type of grant that we're referring to. Chairperson, if funds that have been reallocated are not spent by the end of financial year, as I've indicated, then legitimately a institution can ask for a rollover. What is critical, Chair, is that in terms of the Treasury regulations, there's a criteria that the Treasury normally applies for unforeseen, unavoidable. So it needs to be passing that test. Secondly, there must be a legitimate commitment. But the moral of the story, Chair, is a department can approach the national or provincial treasury, depending on who allocates the resources, and then consideration can be given for a rollover. But Chair, there's a specific process that's associated. The intended reallocation of funds is to ensure that service delivery is provided where funds can be used, as indicated, Chair, for us as a Treasury to make these resources available to provinces as well as to municipalities. In most cases, these fundings are part of our borrowing requirements, and hence it's important that the funding being used productively, Chair, and to the best interest of service delivery. Chair, that's it in a nutshell, the legislative enabling clauses that's been introduced in the Division of Revenue Act, Section 18 and Section 19. I'm going to ask then my colleague, Ughali, and you can decide if you're going to talk or Emmanuel is going to talk, to take us through the specific issues on the provincial side, but specifically to the human settlements portfolio. Ughali, can you guide us?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Jan. Emmanuel will present if his audio is working. If not, I will take it. Emmanuel?
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me, Chair, please? I'm not sure if I'm audible.
We can hear you now, Emmanuel. Thanks.
Okay, thank
over
you.
To you.
We can hear you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Just a brief summary, Mr. Atting has covered quite a bit.
Can we see Emmanuel Chairperson, if it's possible?
Can you see me now?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So Mr. Atting has covered quite a bit of what I included in my presentation, but just to give you a high-level summary of what happens in terms of the provincial process, and particularly what happens in human settlement. So we deal with stopping and reallocations for many sectors, for example, in health, education, and transport. And in all cases, the stopping and reallocation is always the measure of last resort. So it's only the thing that happens once all channels of engagement have been exhausted and there is a high likelihood that a particular province or provinces will underspend at the end of the financial year. So as part of its responsibility for the national department, which is also called the transferring officer of a grant, especially in terms of Schedule 5, we'll have to monitor the financial and non-financial performance of provinces on a regular basis. And they do this based on reports that they receive in terms of the Division of Revenue Act. So it's primarily monthly reports, which are financial in nature, and then quarterly reports, which has a bit of financial in it, but it's more on the non-financial indicators. So for example, we look at number of sites serviced, number of units constructed, and those sort of things. Now, using this information as a basis, the national departments, particularly in human settlements, they engage provinces on at least a quarterly basis, where they have quarterly reviews of performance. And sometimes we are also part of the meeting to provide assistance in terms of monitoring and also division of revenue compliance issues. And what the national department looks at is what the performance has been, both in financial and in terms of non-financial as well, and look at what the provincial departments had indicated as targets in their business plan and the APP, and how have they been performing on a quarterly basis. And during this meeting as well, as with other sectors, the national department will usually highlight or pick up which provinces are at risk of underspending or underperforming at the end of the financial year. And they're given particular attention because in between these reviews, we are familiar that the national departments and the DHS as well do regularly interact with these provincial departments that they find are at risk of underspending or underperforming at the end of the financial year. And they're given support and also given opportunities to demonstrate where they can improve their performance there. Now, it comes to certain points in many sectors where the national department will deem that whatever measures they have been putting in place are not yielding any benefits, and then they start implementing or invoking sections of the Division of Revenue Act that deals with compliance. And the first one is Section 17, which deals with just the withholding of the grant. So here, just the next transfer is withheld to the province until they can prove that the funds that they can improve the performance. There is a provision to withhold for more than 130 days, but less than 120 days. And in that case, National Treasury will have to prove it. And in both instances, the provincial treasuries are informed of an impending withholding. So the provincial treasury as custodian of provincial finances and also responsible for monitoring on their side as well, will have to be made aware if any funds are intended to be withheld to the province for whatever period. Now, if you could go to the next slide. Now, the withholding is always done in consultation, so it's not done unilaterally by the national department. So the national department, in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, must give the provincial department concerned at least 7 working days to motivate why the funds should not be withheld. Now, if the province does not reply, national department is not persuaded by the argument or the motivation of the province, then they go ahead and withhold the grant for 30 days. They can still go ahead and withhold for up to 120 days and give the province the chance to improve their performance, or at least show or demonstrate that they can improve the performance. Now, as I said, the withholding, which is done in terms of Section 18, is a measure of last resort. So it happens after the national department has exhausted all channels of communication in terms of improving performance problem, and it's done in terms of Section 18. Now, different sectors have different ways of arriving at this at this decision, but in terms of the human settlements, a decision to withhold a, or to stop a grant and to perhaps reallocate to other provinces is taken at the sectoral min-meg. So all provinces are represented with the MECs and the HODs to make the final case in terms of whether the funds should be stopped or not. And only once the decision has been taken there will the national department write to the national treasury in a formal request asking for the funds to be stopped and reallocated. So Section 18 deals with the stopping and Section 19 deals with the reallocation elements. So once the application comes to National Treasury, we will do our necessary checks. The first thing we'll do is to ensure that the processes that I highlighted earlier, such as Section 17, have been adhered to by the National Department. The province has been given ample opportunity to improve performance. And then we'll also look at financial and non-financial performance. We look at trends. We consult with the provincial treasury as well, and we inform them of the intention of the national department. We also check with that the provinces that are intended to receive funds, the additional funds from the funds that are stopped to other provinces, also have the ability to spend those funds at the end of the financial year. So it's no use if a province is receiving additional funds and they also end up underspending at the end of the financial year. So we check from our side in terms of our monitoring on the provinces, and the HOD of the provincial department will usually also provide a submission to indicate in detail how the funds are going to be used. And some even go to the detail of actually submitting a project list so we can see where the funds are going there. And also it must, as Jan indicated earlier, it must be according to the... yes, I did mention we inform provincial treasuries as well because they are the custodian of provincial finances. So once we're satisfied that all the procedures have been followed by the national department and we're satisfied that whatever stopping and reallocation we are doing will result in underspending being minimized, then we make a submission to the minister. And once he's applied his mind and if he wants to approve, then we go ahead with the stopping and reallocation and we formalize it by publishing a gazette. So the gazette is then used by the national department in terms of its adjusting its transfers and by the provincial treasuries because they would need to pass adjustment budgets in the provincial legislatures so that the funds can be transferred. So until that process is done, the province receiving additional funds cannot use the funds. So it has to be done within the financial year, and the national department will then amend the payment schedule and stop funds to the provinces that it wanted to, and transfer additional funds to the provinces where the funds have been reallocated. There. And only once the government gazette has been published can that be formally effected. Go to the next slide. So Chair, this is the high level overview of stopping and reallocation that we have approved in the human settlement sector for the last 5 years. Now you can see the first column gives you the main budget. The second column indicates which departments lost and which departments gained. And the third column will obviously be the adjusted allocations. So the amount in red is the provinces that have lost. And for example, Eastern Cape over the 5 year period has lost just under 240 million. $274 million over the 5 years. Now, if you look at it on a high level on the first table, which deals with the Human Settlements Development Grant, a Schedule 5 grant, the provinces that lost the most will have been Eastern Cape and Free State, and the provinces that gained the most would be Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. Similarly, if you look at the table at the bottom, which is the informal settlements upgrading grant. Now, this was part of the human settlements development grant, but it's over the past few years, it's actually a standalone grant. So there haven't been too many movements, but there have been some swapping and reallocations, just about 354 million rand overall. And you can see the province that gained again the most was Mpumalanga. The province that lost in terms of the quantum was Gauteng. But then we had Free State and Limpopo also losing there. Now, Jay, if you look at it overall, if you consider the amount that allocated to the province, to provinces, we're looking just about 48 billion rand was allocated over the past 5 years. And if you look at the amount that was stopped and reallocated, is just under a billion. So although from each provincial perspective, it's a lot of money that provinces are losing and provinces are gaining, but overall it's just under 2% of the total allocation. So provinces overall still retain about 98% of their allocations over the MTF there. I think that's all from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Emmanuel. So, Chair, we are going to now ask Cello to take us through the municipal part. Cello?
thanks, Chairperson and honorable members, and thanks, Mr. Hartley. I will talk to the municipal aspect of this presentation, and there are about four slides for me to go through. Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Hartling and Emmanuel have already touched quite a bit on what I was going to say on this first slide. In the main processes that Emmanuel has indicated, we also follow, save that we do it in the municipal space, considering that the municipal space is financially is slightly different from the national and province. So our work in terms of consultation around the stopping would follow slightly later in the financial year, because the municipal financial year starts from July and it ends in June. But essentially from this slide, we equally to Emmanuel facilitate a very close consultative process around stopping and reallocation for metros to be specifically, but it is the same process that we do for all other municipalities that are receiving conditional grants, not only for the Department of Human Settlement. What happens, just like Emmanuel indicated, we equally from the municipal space in Treasury receive monthly reports. Quarterly reports, monthly financial, largely financial numbers, and again quarterly non-financial, but with a bit of financial there. After the end of 6 months, which would be December, in the municipal context, Treasury then engages transferring national officers to say, we are now sitting in the middle of the financial year. How are things shaping up? And by there, we are writing to the transferring national officers. These are departments that are responsible for administering conditional grants in the municipal space. And in this case, the Department of Human Settlement is responsible for the two grants that I will talk to. This process we undertake from January. On our side, as National Treasury, we started at the end of January. We write to the department and say to them, please share with us if there are any risks in municipalities, in metros, that they may not spend the money by the end of June. Then these departments would write to us. There's always a challenge, Chairperson, that we only, from February or end of January, only have a month and a half to conclude this process, because whatever decision that would arise out of this process should be completed by the end of March. And the completion means we should have engaged both with the transfer national officers, municipalities, and go to our minister, as Emmanuel has indicated, for him to apply his mind and decide to stop or not, and thereafter publish, gazette and publish, then eventually transfer these monies to municipalities so that they can spend any additional monies. Now, the third bullet there explains that after we have received from the transferring national officers, we are required in terms of Section 38 to equally write to these municipalities. And essentially we're saying to them, in terms of your monthly reports and subsequently quarterly reports, it seems like you may not fully spend the money allocated to you at the end of June. Tell us why we should not stop this money. And in that letter or in those letters, we would include recommendations from the transferring of national officers, or DHS in this case. And these, our letters, would include these bullets that are on the screen. We ask them, why is their expenditure below 40%? They must give us a progress report on the approved projects. Because we believe that at that point in time, this project should be moving much faster than they've reported. How is their cash element? Because some municipalities are not reflecting expenditure because they don't have the cash that we've already transferred. Then they must give a representation in terms of their original plan against where they are now, meaning actual performance against the cash flow. At the beginning of the year, they would have told us that, please give us the money in this format, because that's how we intend to spend it. And essentially this question talks to that. We're saying, you said you wanted this money in this format. You don't seem to be spending it according to that. Why are there deviations? And the commitment level, they must tell us, why are all projects still being awarded? Because the understanding is that projects appointments should have been done even before the year started. Why do we still see that you're still going out on tender, which is in itself another process? Because essentially it might imply that practically you won't spend the money even if you wanted to. Do they have any projects that are under the regulation, the two projects, these are systems of facilitating for faster spending. Would they like to declare upfront that they want their funds stopped, because clearly they can't spend the money, they can volunteer? And if not, and they believe that perhaps the reason they are not where they were supposed to be, it's issues that they can deal with, then they need to give us an acceleration. So we look into all of that, and these bullets that are on the screen forms part of the letter, so they need to talk to that in their response. And subsequent to that, then we will make a determination based on that. And we believe that these are some of the reasons that would make the Treasury, in consultation with the department, to either insist or reconsider on that initial proposal to stop. On the second two slides, that the Department of Human Settlement it has received, and it will be for the 2022-23 financial year. Ms. Hutton, if you can just go to a slide before this one. Yes, thanks. I hope that members of the committee will be able to see the table, but this table essentially reflects the process that we do before we decide. The first column reflects the names of the metropolitan municipalities in each relevant province, the allocation that was made to these municipalities before the start of the financial year in terms of the DORA, how much was transferred as at 31st December, meaning the middle of the financial year. They're saying they've spent at the time. In the next column, how much the department, which is DHS, is saying that the respective municipalities have reported to them. In either way, for all practical purposes, this should be the same. But we know there's many reasons to that cause, that the number may not be the same. So, but they are reporting to us, and as Treasurer, we're able to see how much has been spent by either of the reporting institution. And the next columns reflect percentages. As you can see, Chairperson, the numbers at the time, just by glancing through, in the bottom line, the bolded row reflects that municipalities were saying on average they were spending 21% of their urban settlement development grant by December. And from the DHS side, the number was perhaps lower at 10%. We then wrote as the next column to these municipalities, and we wrote to six of them, and all of them responded, and I think except one, all of them, they were saying don't take the money. But the ultimate, the total proposed initially, we translated into 1.5 billion of the total 7.4 billion of the USDG allocation. We wrote to them, and in response, we could only, or we decided to only stop 200 million from the 100 million from Ekurhuleni and the other 100 million against Ethekwini. And that money was reallocated to City of Johannesburg. Just quickly on the, I think I've largely touched on the bullets below, but I'll just check the parts that I missed. In its response, Nelson Mandela Bay responded that the reason for their zero expenditure was non-reporting, and they would like to update their numbers in terms of reporting. Buffalo City also indicated that the reported expenditure are not in line with their projections, but they would like to update their numbers, and the department, DHS, agreed with that. City of Tshwane said, look, we had problems, and therefore we're actually sitting at 50%, not the zero expenditure that you are reporting. We would always argue that, look, that's your number. That's what you are reporting to us. But nevertheless, that's what they indicated. For Ekurhuleni and Ethekwini, they wrote back, their details were quite sketchy, And we did not believe that, in line with the bullets in the previous...
Chairperson, please intervene.
Okay. What is that, Honorable Seki?
Yes.
We can hear you too.
John, we can.
We can hear you.
Yeah, the presenter, I think Honorable Seki.
Problem is your network, Honorable Seki. We can hear the presenter. Proceed, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. So the two metropolitan municipalities that we spoke from were Ekurhuleni and eThekwini, and it was on the basis of a recommendation from the department, slow expenditure, unrealistic cash flow at the time. And we then decided that from the six that we wanted to stop, we would only stop from the two. Essentially, how we determine the amount for the reallocation, it is first informed by what gets stopped. If there is enough to stop, then we can inform the reallocation, and recommendations from the department are always key in that regard. Ideally, you would like to always give or reallocate to a municipality that is best performing as an encouragement, but sometimes there's not, and in this case, Chairperson, you would see that there would not have been many takers, and hence we were a bit lenient to say, look, let's hear what municipalities are saying, and perhaps this can be also a tool for them to improve on the acceleration plan, fearing that we might stop the money. Next slide is the next, is the second conditional grant that, as Emmanuel indicated, in the provincial space was also formally within the USDG, and it was separated to be on its own to deal with informal settlement specifically. Again, similar table. But in this case, the total allocation for metros for this type of a grant is 4.2 billion. At the time, we transferred about 3.7 municipalities were 3.7 billion. Municipalities were reflecting just slightly below a billion of that. But the transfer national officers said to us, in fact, your municipalities are spending much, much better than the numbers that they are telling you. We have, from our side, a report that says they are sitting at 1.3 billion. Spending at the time in December was 22% reported by municipalities and 30% reported. Same source of information, but coming through from the department. We wrote to all metros and only seven responded. And ultimately we stopped from the two metropolitan municipalities, Nelson Mandela and Mangaung. The bullets below the table are reasons across these municipalities. The second last bullet says Mangaung surrendered funds to be stopped. So they said, look, we're at a state where we think that we don't want to just keep the money for the sake of keeping it. We think that you can rather stop the money, and when we are ready, we would like to get our funds back so that we can proceed with service delivery. In terms of Nelson Mandela, it was a recommendation from the department to say, look, we don't think that this municipality would fully spend by the end of the financial year. At the time, they were sitting at 8%. I think they were the lowest of all the metros. And again, Chairperson, the purpose of the stopping and reallocation is not to stop projects. As Emmanuel said, is to say that the current DS Division of Revenue Act provides to you funding to spend up to the end of the year, will you be able to spend this money in the MTEF, medium-term expenditure framework that are coming your way, perhaps fix your planning and your ability to spend now, and when time is right in the following year, you will start to accelerate. What is key from the Treasury's point of view, and perhaps it may not necessarily be the issue or the objective on the department side, is that we need to protect local government. Because if we only stop and not reallocate, it might mean that the money must go back to the fiscus. And of course, there are many competing priorities there. We feel where we see that local government might lose. So we always want to reallocate so that we can have municipalities that are moving faster to bring forward their projects while others are fixing their house. Yes, I think I was already touching base on this, Mr. Hatting. Thank you so much. In terms of Section 19, municipalities that reflect better performance are considered for reallocation so they can fast track their services delivery mandate and also bring forward priority projects that are of essence. Municipalities that are receiving additional funds are required to indicate if they are ready for implementation or if they've got projects but with inadequate funding, then we would say, look, let's bring forward your project and rather you move, because you're moving faster, in any event, achieve your service delivery mandate sooner. But you also look at their capability to absorb this funding. And the last bullet, the eligibility of reallocation. We always want to look at the best performing municipalities. This should be municipalities that are complying to the many MFMA and reporting requirements and specifically Section 71. We would like to reallocate to municipalities that are stable and municipalities whose projects are ready for implementation in the current year and would like to bring and assist them. But one reason that we would do that is in instance where the transferring national officer says, we would like you to give additional funding to so and so municipality. And it was the case in this particular gazetting process that we did during the month of March. I think that was my last slide, Chairperson and Mr. Hatting. Thank you.
So Chairperson, just to conclude our input, apologies on my side that I couldn't switch off my camera as I presented because I was flying the presentation. Was not introduced by Parliament, as I've indicated initially, then the under-expenditure that would have been surrendered to the National Revenue Fund, Chair, would be quite radical. And therefore, we firmly believe if this tool is used productively, correctly, it safeguards not only the provinces, not only the sector departments, but also municipalities. Chair, as you can hear, the team that we've assembled to present to you today, they are responsible for the 24 provincial grants. We obviously work very closely via the provincial treasuries, and basically it impact on about 124 provincial departments, but not all of them necessarily receive conditional grants, but they oversee a portfolio of about 127.5 billion rand, Chairperson. On the municipal side, we talk about 23 grants for 257 municipalities, and the teams look after a portfolio of about 94.5 billion, Chair. So I'm sure you will agree with me, this is a massive process in order to give effect to the requirements of the Annual Division of Revenue Act, and the Treasury tie it utmost to do this as eloquently and as transparently and as fairly as possible. Chair, the last point is there was a question, how does this process impact on the target set in the medium strategic, medium-term strategic framework? Chair, this is a bit of a difficult one for the Treasury to answer. The target set by the sector is normally done in conjunction with the presidency. And then obviously the fiscal system obviously give effect to this. And if there's changes in the allocations as been appropriated, share the same principle apply as what we've communicated with the APP. You are allowed to make changes, but the point is to try and do it not as frequently as possible, because then you compromise the performance of the departments and the targets they set in relationship to the resources that's been allocated. But Chairperson, with regard to that specific question, we think the department would be in a better position to answer that specific question. The Treasury is mindful of that, Chair, but the specific target setting and how it's been done in consultation with the provinces and the municipalities, that's largely the prerogative of the department. Chairperson, let me stop there.
Thank you very much, National Treasury. Just to check with the department if they want to add anything before we allow members to interact with presentation.
Honorable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues from National Treasury, good morning. Chairperson, I think I don't have anything to add what the colleagues have said. I agree with them fully, so I support the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, that is the presentation. I'm now going to allow members to interact with the presentation. Honorable Makaseni and Honorable Tseki. Honorable Dr. Khumalo. Honorable Nancy Sikwai. Those are the hands. Honorable members, the time is 12 o'clock. By 1 o'clock, we must stop the meeting. There is a meeting of the chair of chairs that is starting at that point. So can I request that members be very precise and without actually leaving anything?
Okay.
If you can just leave the preambles and, yeah, some. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chairperson. It was me again.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. Really, out of nine provinces, five provinces, here their funds have been stopped and also relocation, which is not acceptable at all to provinces. Another issue is the issue of Free State. The Free State is the lowest on allocation, yet is the highest amount of being stopped, which shows extreme deficiency, Chair, and which means the provincial government is not helping also the National Treasury and the provincial treasurer. So what measures are we putting in place to capacitate the province of Free State so that they can use the funds accordingly? it seems now even a person, you will doubt even the person who approved the business plan of Free State. If every year the business plans of Free State are being approved, the next thing they don't reach their target. So I think the National Treasurer, they must give the province of Free State a serious attention to assist them. Then the number three is the issue of Gauteng, Limpopo, and again Free State. Their funds have been stopped for informal settlement. While our people are struggling to get services, again, there's a problem of the officials of the department or the capacity of the department generally in the province. And it also, they are failing the people. Also, lastly, Chair, let me also welcome on the performance of Northern Cape. We were in Northern Cape and they reported that they are doing well on this informal settlement upgrading grant. And indeed, the National Treasury is saying that. So at least if the Free State and Eastern Cape and Limpopo are not doing anything, the National Department must send maybe teams that will assist the provincial government of Free State so that they can use the grant. We can't every time, the Free State every year is part of the provinces that are not using their grant. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zeki.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the issue is that of consistent. Well, I've not checked, but can the Treasury confirm that they are quite consistent in making sure that provinces and municipality account on their expenditure? Because in some instances, you'll find that, but this province always is late, or this municipality is always having money more than 50% beyond December that is not spent, although I may not be specific. Probably after they've written letters to them, there are responses like this presentation reflects. 1.6 billion was reduced to 200. Of course, based on engagement, probably my question will be responded in that manner. But can they confirm it because of their consistency? The other one, Chair, like what Member Makeseni is saying, when we were in Northern Cape, we all agreed as members to say, if we had our way, we were going to ask Treasury to transfer 50 million to Northern Cape because that's what they needed. I mean, we said 50 million probably they could. As a committee, is there a way that we could, of course, this can be abused sometimes or can be misconstrued, but where we have got a legitimate understanding that a province or a municipality, we can support them on their request for funding. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dr. Khumalo.
Thanks, Chair, and thank you to the colleagues for the presentation. Chair, I'll start off by maybe making a request for the provisional grant framework to be shared, if possible, if that can be shared with members. Chair, I've always, and I think members will know on record as well, had a concern around this topic that we are talking about today. You know, so consultations always take place, Chairperson, before funds are stopped. We understand that. But the reality and the concern is to what extent is that consultation inclusive of citizens? Because there's consultations with the municipalities, the provinces, accounting officers, et cetera. But there's, to what extent do we include citizens in these consultations? Because push comes to shove. The reality is we have capacity in South Africa. We have people that are able to deliver projects. Yet project in, project out, Chairperson, we keep seeing these projects stopping and citizens suffering at the end of the day because somebody didn't spend the money or somebody was unable to spend that money. And for me, that is the biggest concern because everything we do as government should result in a benefit for the residents. And yes, we reallocate funds to provinces, I understand that, that are able to spend. But the reality is all South Africans in all corners of the country have the right to shelter. And my biggest bugbear is the fact that we residents or citizens land up suffering because somebody didn't perform their job. And, you know, and I ask this question because how much power do citizens actually have? Because like I say, there are people who are able to deliver these projects and, you know, that would be capacitated enough to make sure that people get, you know, the services that they need. And I also understand that, you know, there's remedial action, as we've discussed earlier, on departments and entities and accounting officers. But the reality is none of there's no remedial action for the lives that are lost. And that's the reality. Because, for example, you know, grants aren't spent, people fighting for houses, people, you know, I think we perpetuate the challenges that are out there in society by, you know, the policy stances that we put in place. So the question ultimately is, you know, to what extent do citizens get consulted on these issues in finding solutions? Because this happens every year in and out. Surely we need to involve stakeholders in these challenges, and the biggest stakeholders being our citizens. And again, Chairperson, a concern, maybe not necessarily a question, but again, around, you know, centering everything that we do around our citizens, being citizen-centric. You know, accounting officers have provision to alert National Treasury of funds they may not be able to spend. You know, that is disturbing. You know, Manga Wong, for example, voluntarily just surrendered money. What about those citizens? For me, that's the biggest question, and I never seem to get a direct answer about it. I've asked the minister on this platform, or the deputy minister, rather, on this platform, and it continues to be a niggling bugbear for me, in all honesty, because everything we do needs to be citizen-centric. I also wanted to know, maybe also, just for clarity, in terms of how the money is put together for these funds, for these various grants, and you know where they are derived from, and then I'll end there because you asked Chairperson that we be brief. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Safai. Honorable Safai. Unmute, Honorable Safai.
Thank you, Chair. I'm fine with the invitation by Treasury, but I want to put a view in terms of the DORA, the decisions that have been taken. I do understand that perhaps the criteria on these two grants, USCG and the other one, was on the basis of the economic hub of these metros. But I have a view that the population of other municipalities which are in rural perhaps would need to be looked into, because at which stage that those municipalities would be upgraded when they've got an overload of communities that they are holding and they are responsible to give them service. I'm putting this to Treasury to say, perhaps at which stage that would be considered, because we've got to upgrade rural people so that they don't come to cities. They must be certified where they are, because that's where they belong. But what is absent is necessary services for them to be satisfied. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpiti.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question that I have to know, particularly, I know that the process was being outlined by Treasury, but one would like to know, particularly in instances when the allocation is made towards the end of the financial year, how they deal with that particular processes, because obviously once an allocation has been made towards the end of the financial year, not much time is given for that money to be used in the manner it's been planned to be used, and so does not give does not allow for processes to be followed accurately because of the timing of that allocation being made. And so how does that process, from a Treasury point of view, how is it handled, particularly when the conversation of looking at the spending, either of a municipality or a province, does that in any way, is that taken into consideration? Because surely when one plans, they plan at, you know, prior the beginning of a new financial year, and when that financial year begins, one would have the plans in place in order to spend that particular budget to achieve whatever the outcomes may be for that particular housing or human settlement department. And so mine is just to say that those considerations are as well something that I think perhaps need to be expanded upon for clarity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpiti. Just to add on the questions, National Treasury, I think it's maybe just to start by saying that we appreciate the work that you have done, you are doing, and we appreciate that there was this intervention through Parliament. But our view is that the implementation part of it needs to be strengthened such that our citizens, as other members, benefit in terms of what you are doing in terms of stopping and reallocation. It must be centered around the citizens. The question that I'm having on the issue of the you indicated that the part that how does this process impacted on the MTFS, let's say, is the issue of precedence. But this is one government, and President had pronounced the issue that there is a need for spheres of government working together to maximum and the implementation processes and make sure that there is the impact in terms of working together and improve coordination and planning together as government through the DDM. For instance, yourself, you have the responsibility to support provinces and municipalities in terms of financial capacities through the MFA, MF. Support the municipality in terms of their responsibilities. How does together yourself code Treasury, planning and monitoring, the presidency and Treasury working together such that the in terms of the support that used in terms of the constitution that you're supposed to do, the capacitating the various
spheres of government, you are able to work together. And as you stop this relocation, which is a good thing, because the sector would not lose the money, but the citizenry will continue to suffer. How then do you make sure that in the next financial year, that province or that municipality, there is enough capacity, they follow the principle of project management, and you know that by when you allocate the resources, there is a plan ready for them to implement those projects, the project themselves. And the second issue is that including national departments. National departments, without receiving a report, that municipality must say, you have not given us the expenditure. We think that you are not going to spend this money. Explain how are you going to progress on this allocation, whether we should stop the intention to stop or whatever. How does Treasury, if in you have to stop, are you able to coordinate everybody that's supposed to build capacity in those areas and go and build capacities? For instance, Mangaung is the baby of national. It's no longer a baby of province, because you have actually taken powers from those municipalities. All the national departments have sent their teams there. How does those teams help Mangaung to be able to utilize the resources? I think the issue that we're raising here is that you can still do better with those using the DTM, working with everybody. If the presidency has to lead all the teams to capacitate these areas so that our citizens should not suffer because of, but you then protect the baseline for the department, but our people are not benefiting out of that system. So can we get response, National Treasurer?
Thank you, Chairperson, for that host of very interesting questions, but also very difficult questions to answer, Chair. We will certainly do our best to respond. I'm going to ask my team to kick off first. So perhaps, Ughali, you can go first, followed by Emmanuel, then Cello, and then I'll try to make sure that those more difficult ones, that we try to respond to that. Ughali, would you mind to kick off first?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ian. Yes, so I'll kick off. So we do agree with members that, the stopping and relocation is not ideal. And as you said, it's a measure of last resort. It's not something really that we advocate for. But I think how it helps the sector to retain the funds and to be spent within the sector instead of, because if once the sector does not spend that money and that money is not committed, then the funds have to be surrendered to the National Revenue Fund, which is at national government level, and then will have to be reallocated to other sectors. Maybe in the coming years or so. So really, as it has been highlighted, it's really to keep the money in the sector. But as members have said, stopping funds from a particular province, making an example of Free State, it doesn't take away the need that is there. So that one, we agree with members. It does not take away the need. The need is still there in Free State. But as has been indicated, there's ample of time given. Even from our side as National Treasury, we do monitoring. We've got monitoring mechanisms. as Emmanuel has said, I mean, we meet quarterly with the sector. Also, every year between July and August, we go to each province. We meet with all the sectors and go through the expenditure report in terms of how you performed last year and how you perform in the current year, and what are you doing to improve. So really, we have discussions with is us, the treasuries, and what we have begun to do in the past few years with COVID when we're doing meetings online. We'll begin also to go with the sectors themselves so that even DPME, as they're responsible for performance information, that all of us go there and see, I mean, how best can the sectors deliver and ensure that they meet their MTSF targets. So we do agree that this is a serious issue, and we continuously, I mean, give it attention. I mean, some provinces, we go more not just once. I mean, an classical example is that one of the state to say, I mean, we know from our perspective, I mean, different sectors in Free State have challenges. So we go to discuss with the treasurers to say, how best do we assist the department within your province to deliver better? I would say in terms of, I think I was trying to respond to Honorable Makeseni's questions in that respect, and I think probably Honorable Dr. Khumalo. And yeah, we do agree that Northern Cape has been doing well in terms of performance. And as members have indicated, and maybe just to answer Honorable MPT's question also in that respect, is to say, yeah, you know, Northern Cape is one of those provinces, even if you give them money 10 days before the end of the financial year, they are likely to spend it because of the pressure. Have really built capacity that actually their neighbor Free State can learn from. But just to say that if we reallocate late in the financial year and a department is not able to spend, but because there were kind of there was that consultation to say, will you be able to spend? So if they're able to commit the money, meaning they have a procurement plan, maybe they've already procured or they do have invoices to pay, but due to time constraints, they cannot. So once the money is committed, they can apply for a rollover, so which we're likely to give to them once they give us proof to say no. We could not spend this money, but here are the commitments in terms of how we're going to spend that money. So generally, we run that process in May because the financial year. And we let them know in earlier on time. Normally, what we do, because we run the rollover process for provinces on conditional grants. Generally, we try and make sure that somewhere in June, we alert the provincial treasurers to say, look, in terms of the applications that you brought to us, this is what we have approved or are provisionally approving, because we know that the departments who have submitted the annual financial statements to AG, they have not been audited because they would have submitted through the pre-audited financial statements. So this is what we've approved, and this is what you need to surrender to the National Revenue Fund, essentially as a province. So we allow them that time to say, so that they are able to spend that money in time. So we don't want a situation where we say, we'll only tell you in October, because now once you tell them late, then it becomes a problem that that money might not be spent. So we tell them earlier in advance to do that. Maybe just to say, accounting for Honorable Seki's question, accounting for expenditure consistency, I would say at least from the provincial side, there's that consistency the departments, all of them in a province, they submit expenditure monthly to us. And on a quarterly basis, what we do, what we're required by the Section 32 of the PFMA, we publish expenditure reports for provincial departments, which include the conditional grant spending. And before we do that, a day before we send the information for publication, because we publish through a gazette, we send it back to the treasurers and say, can you confirm this information and the HOD signs off? So I think we've got a matured process in terms of that. So we definitely, in that space, I think we are fine. Yes, I think Northern Cape, we do agree. Honorable Kumalo, the grant frameworks are within the Division of Revenue for bill that has been just approved by Parliament. Every year you'll see all of them in each. I hope that the researchers will be able to help you with that, because the information is readily available. So all of them for all grants, both provincial and local government, they're within the Division of Revenue bill. So I'll allow my local government colleagues talk about the consultations with citizens, because I think that process is required in terms of the local government. But on the provincial side, the difficult one, but from the stopping of course from provincial side, there's no, to my knowledge at least, there will be no a consultation with citizens. And we do agree that, I mean, that everyone's got the right to shelter as per the constitution say. In terms of how money is put together for different grants, most of the time it's because there's a policy to provide a particular service by government. And then over time, money is allocated to the national government departments to deliver that service. But the national department does put a formula in terms of how they would allocate that funding to different provinces. From national treasury side, we only have a formula that you allocate the unconditional allocation fees, the equitable share. So the grants are the national departments, is their prerogative in terms of how they would, which criteria they use for allocating different grants. Yes, I've already I think also the comment from Honorable Semenya, I have answered. I think from my side, I believe I've answered all the questions. But Emmanuel, you can add. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Holly. Emmanuel?
Yes, sir. Most of it. Just one question by Honorable PT regarding the stopping the allocation late into the financial year. So Khali did mention that the provinces have the option of the rollover. So even if the funds are transferred late and they're unable to spend it, there is the option of the fund being rolled over as long as it's committed. So does that have been an issue that we're not comfortable with? That we receive late from departments, not necessarily the human settlements, but other ones as well. And the problem was that we're getting applications to stop and reallocate too late into the financial year, sometimes in February. And by the time we process it, the fund the last 2 weeks of March. And it's very unreasonable to expect that the province will be able to spend those funds. So in order to balance that, with the department's ability to make a decision, we put in a cutoff date in terms of when national departments can apply for stopping and reallocation of funds. So from the current financial year, national departments will have to submit applications by the end of December. So that gives us enough time to process it, and it gives provinces at least 2 months to implement and spend those funds. And it gives the national department and the sector enough time to arrive at a decision in terms of whether funds should be stopped or not. Thank you.
Thanks, Emmanuel. Cello?
Thanks, Mr. Hatteng, and thanks to the chair and honorable members. I'll just touch base again on the local government aspect, but I'll leave some to Mr. Hatteng. The first one that I would like to attempt to answer is the one from Honorable Tseki, the issue of consistency in how municipalities account on expenditure. Again, as you indicated, we do receive monthly reports and quarterly reports. But the point raised was that how come would a proposed 1.6 billion be reduced to 200 as the ultimate stopping? In the case of the USDG specifically, from the table that I presented, members would have noticed that generally all municipalities therefore, it was in the interest of the grant itself for us to push these metropolitan municipalities through this letter. I don't want to say threat, but is a way to say, if you don't improve on your plans to accelerate, we could stop. So that in itself was an indication. But because we don't want to lose money off USDG as a principle, we thought that perhaps let's give these metropolitan municipalities an opportunity to scale up their performance rather than stopping, because then there would not be an opportunity to reallocate elsewhere. Almost all of them were underspending at that time. But what that does is that their responses, which would have been signed off by the accounting officers, would tell us what they plan to do, how they are going to accelerate on their committees, SCM committees, and would require proofs in there, how they will improve of their cash management, and so on and so forth. Some of them, they actually would tell us to say, we are going to have a war room. In fact, we are already instituting it. From now on, we will check them weekly. We guarantee you, Treasury, that by June, this money will be fully spent. We will use this letter should they come later to ask for a rollover. So that's an ongoing. Then we'll say to them, why are you asking for a rollover now in June? Because 3 months ago, you said, and it's just reporting. So that would be the one reason that we'll try to encourage consistency. But Mr. Hatteng will talk more on this issue around measures that have been put in place for standard reporting with municipalities. The second issue that I would like to address is the one by Honorable Dr. Khumalo. Why would funds, especially in the wake of the challenge that they are facing. The stopping and reallocation, Honorable Chairperson, is in itself a cash management tool within a period. So it is very time bound. You are required to spend this money within a period. So even if you've got good plans, but if your project cash management suggests that you could only practically spend the money later, the best thing is really to surrender the money. And to put it simply, it may be that committees have not seats. So if we transfer the money, it won't be spent, because if committees have not seats, it means there's no contractor on site. So this money won't be spent. But what that would do, should we release the money, the cash with needs on the ground will sit in the bank account. And if that municipality has got debts, that money could be eaten for by other things. So it's a protection of cash in a way for municipalities that are not stable. What we then are confident is that at least the money is sitting with the treasury. When they are ready, then we'll give their money back. But in the interim, let's give this money to the others. The third point, which should be my last, is an issue raised by Honorable Mpiti, where he said, why would allocations be made towards the end of the financial year if they would be spent? And I think my colleague Ohalale Tseng has already answered this. Some projects, especially in the USDG and the ISUP, because these are multi-year capital projects, they would in any event be continuous. So a contractor will already be on site, and perhaps because they also are already aware of DORA, they would move faster. And once the reallocation is been gazetted and published, the sector would call them and say, accounting officer, there's new money. Can you just continue with that which was going to start from July? Just continue. Let's save the contractor money to this established site. Let him just scale up. So that would be one of the reasons. But again, as Ohalele Tseng has indicated, there's an opportunity for a rollover if they commit the funds. But sometimes, Honorable Chairperson, there are urgent needs that can wait for procurement, that can wait for the next year allocation. And this could also come in favor as well. We sometimes would direct a municipality like Mangaung to say, this money that will be allocated to you through a reallocation, you can only use it to clear the spilling storages that are on site. Use contractors that are capable to immediately go on site and fix the problems, be it of potholes and water related, as long as they're in line with the conditions and the policy of the grant, those we can direct and instruct. Thank you.
Thank you, Cello. So, Chairperson, let me try to conclude with the outstanding questions. So as far as the question of consulting civil society, in the municipal space, Chairperson, it's a legal requirement in terms of a Systems Act, and there's also requirements in the Municipal Finance Management Act. So when a municipality table their budget by the 31st of March, as per the law, and adopted by the latest 30 June, that's the window that's been created in law at the municipal level to consult the community. If you ask me, municipalities do it all eloquently? The answer is no, but in law, they are supposed to consult and accommodate the inputs and requirements for the citizens in that process. At the national level, although it's not a legal requirement, Chair, As part of tabling the medium-term budget policy statement by the Minister of Finance ahead of the annual budget, you could argue that is the instrument that we use to consult the community, the public and civil society. Chair, from where we sit, what we are trying to do is to be as transparent as possible. And if the Honourable Chair, on our website, we host annually the budget, the consolidated budget information for all 257 municipalities. We do a consolidated publication. Quarterly, we publish the financial results for all 257 municipalities, including their conditional grant performance for all grants. And we produce once a year, Chair, the State of Local Government report that's also accessible on our website. And Chair, in addition to that, what we have done is we've developed a tool called Municipal Money, where when a department appear before Parliament, if you go to this website, you can see all the information of all 257 municipalities. And as they present, you can actually verify that the information they share with the committee is in fact what they've reported to the national and provincial treasury. It's, the website is called Municipal Money. So Chair, in addition to consulting civil society, Chairperson, I think government as a whole, we have a tendency to think that we know what the community necessarily want. And I think that is a challenge that as a treasury we're trying to advocate, because we have all these NGOs, we've got all these other structures. So the difficulty is that sometimes as government, we think we understand the needs of a community. So we fully support the approach, but it is not an easy thing, as the good doctor has asked us, how do you solve this? Because we have a budget process that's largely politically driven from a priority perspective. And it's important that we understand the needs of our community and civil society. Again, on the local government side, it's already legislated. Chairperson, then there's the issue about the consistency. The National Treasury has in 2009 issued a budget law, and in terms of that law, we have described the budget formats and the structures of all municipalities, and that's a constitutional requirement in terms of Section 215. So today, if you look at any municipal budget, Chairperson, they all look the same, they all have the same formats. In addition to that, in 2017, we've issued what we call a law on the standard chart of accounts. So if you look at a repairs and maintenance item in municipality one, Chair, and you look at the repairs and maintenance and item or municipality 257, the way the transactions and the books are kept is exactly the same. All of these are initiatives to improve the quality of information in the municipal space, in order for oversight bodies like yourself to exercise your oversight responsibilities. Chairperson, the Division of Revenue Act is one of the more fundamental redistributive tools of our government. And it's a pity I couldn't show that slide, but in the Division of Revenue Bill and all its schedules, there's a nice slide in the document, Chair, that shows how we look after the poorest of the poor in the sense of reallocating more resources to the rural municipalities relative to the metros. So Chairperson, that's the slide that every year when we do present the bill to members of parliament and specifically the appropriation committee, that we show the redistributive nature of the resources being allocated to to the rural municipalities. So the information is in Annex W1 of the Division of Revenue Act. If the committees are interested, we will circulate the link to the Division of Revenue Bill and all its annexures to the Secretariat to circulate to the committees. Chairperson, and I think when the issue as far as Bangaung is concerned, you are correct, Chair. My team is responsible for overseeing the national intervention, the Section 1397 intervention. We have done this jointly with COCTA and some of the sector departments. Chair, it's not an easy process in the sense that administratively, you can't solve political challenges. So we need political solutions for political challenges. And therefore, as the Treasury, we're focusing our energy to the best of our ability to solve the administrative related challenges. But we do have the support of our political principles to help us to navigate and guide through that process. Chairperson, I think that's in a nutshell most of the questions. I hope that we haven't skipped anybody. I have to say the question by the doctor, how you consult the civil society when you have to stop reallocate funding is a challenge. And that's why we're trying hard from our perspective to put as much information in the public domain. And I would really encourage the members, Chair, if you can look at municipal money, you can even access it on your cell phone. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you for the members' questions.
Thank you very much, National Treasury, for this interaction. The Portfolio Committee has learned a lot from your presentation and input. Because we don't have time, I will not take any follow-up questions. But we appreciate that you have on our invitation. We should continuously engage one another, looking at what the MFA and the PFMA is required for all of us, inclusive of us as a parliament, play oversight of on the department, and department, your responsibility, particularly National Treasury, planning and monitoring, and COCTA, because you have a national department, you have a responsibility of oversight on the province and local municipality and provide support and assist in terms of building capacity. And now then, together, all of us, we should then, as we go forward, we're able to share information and work together to maximize accountability and so that our oversight can assist assist our citizens, that the promised better life for all can then be able to reach all of them. With that note, I want to thank you very much, and I hope that next time when we invite you, please avail yourself for further engagement on these issues.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much for the meeting. I think that was our secretariat. This was our last item on the agenda.
Yes, Chairperson, that was the last item.
Okay, thank you very much. National Treasury, you are released. I think, Tep, are you in the meeting?
I am in the meeting, Chair.
Okay. Tepo and Sabelo, please, as we deal with the quotas,
issues that drawing attention to members.
Excuse me, Chair.
Yes, Sabelo.
Sorry, Honorable Chair, you cut for a while there. I couldn't get you.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm saying as we interact with the department, please assist in terms of your research. Help us to amaze all the information that is needed for members to be able to do their oversight in terms of this meeting. Actually, from my side, we have learned a lot to say that there are certain things that we can do better as a portfolio committee to strengthen our oversight. So even yourself as the team that support us, let's look at these issues and be able to to assist all of us to be able to increase or to strengthen our oversight role, so that at the ultimate end, we assist in terms of getting accountability as a reality in the system of government. With that note, honorable members, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.